Warning, the following podcast features views and opinions that are not representative of the collective views of the Whispers groups. Some of these views may not be suitable for children. Accordingly, the producers and hosts of the Missy AE podcast must insist that no one attempt to take anything that is being said as representative of the views of any of the Whispers groups.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Missy AE podcast. Tonight, we are bringing to you Sports Whispers Weekly, but there is something that we are going to have to tackle before we get into tonight's proceedings. First, I do want to say for any of our regular listeners, we will be having the premiere episode of the Big Brother 26 Recap podcast this upcoming Friday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, hosted by Melissa and myself. So you can catch that on Blog Talk Radio as well as any of our other podcast networks, such as iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and so on and so forth. However, we were originally going to do a primarily sports-based podcast tonight. Obviously, unless people have been living underneath a rock, there has been a recent event that has come up that I feel needs some sort of comment. For anybody who isn't aware, WWE Hall of Famer and former President of the United States, Donald Trump, there was an assassination attempt earlier today in Pennsylvania at one of his rallies where supposedly a bullet had hit his ear, although there's been conflicting reports that some have said that the bullet hit the teleprompter, and then the glass that came off of the teleprompter ended up scraping his ear, causing him to bleed. Regardless, I know I've had comments about him previously on all of our shows, as I'm sure Jim has, as well as all of our other, some of our other guests that we have had in the past. The number one thing that must be condemned is violence, regardless on whatever side of the political spectrum you're on. If people want to tune out of this show thinking that this is going to be a political show, it's not going to be a political show, but I felt that this needed to be addressed. Then you know, people can just tune out right now if they want to, people that are listening. But this is basically one of those days that we're probably going to remember, like January 6th, like what recently happened a couple of years back on January 6th. And needless to say, it terrifies me that we might be on the verge of a potential civil war going down now that an attempt has been made on a former president's life. By the way, just updates, the shooter is confirmed dead, as is one unfortunate audience member who was shot directly in the head, and two other audience members are currently seriously injured in the hospital right now. But regardless, I feel that basically, you know, everything that happened today should be condemned. regardless of what side you fall on, whether it's the left, whether it's the right. Because, you know, who knows? With the freedoms that we have today, you know, who knows if we're even going to be able to have podcasts in the near future with how censorship has started to rise over the past couple of years, and with the temperature of the nation continuing to rise. And I'm not just speaking temperature in terms of like, oh, it's 100 degrees out. I kind of fear for our nation.
Yeah.
But with that being said, obviously we have a whole bunch on the line with us right now. Nobody came to talk about politics. We came here to talk about sports. So we got MLB All-Star Weekend taking place, well, soon to be taking place, I should say, starting on Monday. We do have the minor leagues currently taking place when it comes to MLB All-Star, when it comes to All-Star Weekend. We'll take a look at the MLB trade deadline that'll potentially we'll see teams potentially become buyers or become sellers. We'll also take a look at the ESPY Awards and much more. But first off, we have Lou, we have Diane, we have Chris, and we have Alex joining us to start off tonight's show. How's everybody doing tonight?
All right.
Okay.
Good.
Good.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
All right. I kind of figure we should probably start off with, God, we go from one terrifying story to another. Former Major League Baseball player Wander Franco.
Oh yeah.
Has officially. Let's just put it this way. He's basically a pedophile now. He has officially been charged with sexual abuse and sexual exploitation against a minor, as well as human trafficking as well, if this report is to be believed by ESPN. Or I should say he's facing charges in the basically this whole entire situation that has taken place out of the Dominican Republic. He's been on administrative leave for the entire season. He has now been placed on the restricted list, which basically means that he won't be paid and he will not receive service time while on the restricted list. So basically, this frees up his entire contract, essentially, as of now for the Tampa Bay Rays. In January, for people who are not aware of how this whole entire thing has gone down, Wander Franco has not played in the majors since social media allegations came to light last August that accused him of having sexual relations with a 14-year-old girl. It's worth noting the age of consent in the Dominican Republic is 18. In January, prosecutors claimed that Franco paid the girl's mother the equivalent of thousands of dollars to remain silent about the alleged abuse. And according to a Spanish-language report from Listen Diario, the girl's mother is facing charges of trafficking, sexual exploitation, as well as money laundering. Now, while prosecutors initially indicated that they were considering charging Franco with commercial sexual exploitation and money laundering, a judge lessened the potential charges against him to just sexual and psychological abuse. Those charges come with a potential prison term of 2 to 5 years. I assume that means per count. 2 to 5 years. The court gave prosecutors until July to determine whether or not to officially bring charges, which of course they have now decided to do so. They had originally already agreed to extend his leave until the All-Star break, but now it appears that he will basically be on the sidelines until this whole thing is resolved, which, I mean, let's face it. This, and by the way, the additional charge of human trafficking comes with potential for as much as 20 years in prison. So you can basically say that his Major League Baseball career is essentially over at this point.
Exactly.
I mean, basically throwing his entire career away to try and take advantage of a minor, probably a minor who was starstruck, might I add, because, you know, he was a pretty big star over in the Dominican Republic. You know, kind of like how David Ortiz was and other Dominican baseball players that have come out of the Dominican Republic. I mean, as sickening enough as it is, but that he already has a girlfriend to begin with. They have two sons, one of them who was just born 2 years ago. And now he's basically ruined his entire career. And I mean, he'll probably, if he gets out of prison, he'll get out of prison probably at around the age of 50. So it's not like his entire life is over, but at least half of his life is over at this point. I mean, let's start with you, Chris. What are your thoughts on Wander Franco basically throwing his entire career away?
It's fucking sick.
Needless to say, it's very disgusting. The fact that a person like him would basically use his status as a professional athlete to try and you know, coerce a minor into a sexual relationship. I mean, this guy already, he had himself getting paid all the way up until the year 2034. He literally was having money rolling in for pretty much a majority of his career. And he was already a budding star as it was in the major leagues. And now all of a sudden that is basically just thrown right out the window. Just completely thrown right out the window because of a very sickening act by somebody like him. Oh, by the way, Chris, before I forget, I was talking with your dad earlier about College Football 25 that's coming out. It is available for pre-order on Xbox.
Yeah, the new Xbox, not on Xbox One.
Oh, it's not on Xbox One?
Nope.
Oh. Oh, wow. Okay, so EA must have completely changed up, because the last I remember was that usually if you were buying if you were buying Madden, for example, you would be buying the Xbox One version. The Xbox One version would normally come with the next-gen version. Wow. Okay, so they've completely changed that then.
Yep. It's not playable on my device, which is complete bullshit, because I've been waiting 9 months for that fucking game, and now I'm mad, man. I ain't been so mad in my life. It's not funny. So I'm about to spend $600.
You know what it is, Chris, is that they want you to shell out that extra money to get the next gen version of it. That's why they've chosen to to have it not support the regular Xbox One anymore, which I think is ridiculous.
It does sound ridiculous.
All right, on the Wander Franco story, let's get your thoughts, Lou. What are your thoughts on? I know you would classify him as your dumbass of the week, or maybe the dumbass of the year. But
yes.
What are your thoughts, Lou, on Wander Franco basically throwing his career away?
Yeah, throwing it all away, and throwing it all away for what? Just to do something completely stupid that you had no business doing a game over anyway, with a money like that. How sick can you be to pull something like that? You know, I mean, what was she, 14, 15 years old? First of all, you're
14.
A lawbreaker. 14, that makes it even worse. You're a lawbreaker. You're a child molester. Not to mention a complete freak. And now you threw your whole career away just because of the stupidity that you had to pull. I mean, you know, kids look up to these players, you know, I always know they're heroes, and along comes this asshole and, you know, is just, you know, ruined the integrity, not just for himself, but for the game as well. I mean, really, I mean, his baseball career is tarnished. He was doing so well to be good, and then he does something completely stupid like that. And that's who you got on your team. Hmm. Just sick thing.
Yeah, it really is. It's, you know, there's no room in not just sports, but like in life, period, for
no.
Something like that. And what makes it even sicker is the fact that her mother is part of it as well. You know, her mother is going down for trafficking and everything as well. So, Diana, I mean, it's just, the fact is that her mother saw the money that he was giving them by keeping it a secret, you know, and she put money over the health of her daughter.
That is not right.
No.
It's sickening. I mean, let's get your thoughts, Chris, or not Chris, because we already got your thoughts. Let's get your thoughts, Alex, on this sickening story.
Yeah, I mean, it's just deplorable. I know I've said it a couple of weeks back, and just, like, not much more can be said. Chris summed it up pretty well. You know, effing sick. It's just like, the guy has everything at his fingertips. Not only is he a pro athlete, he got like the biggest contract ever in Rays history. Notoriously cheap team, you know, low payroll. So he was like the next great one. Doesn't justify anything. The guy's a piece of shit, point blank. So that doesn't really matter if you're a janitor or if you're playing shortstop for the Rays. You cannot be, whoever in the world, everyone's equal, and no one can do what he did. And it's just like, dude, I mean, so it's just mind-blowing. And he's going to be treated like a perp, like a criminal that he is. He's not going to get special treatment,
yeah.
So I'm really glad. You know, it overseas, people knock the judicial system, but it looks like it's harder to buy your way, you know, luxuries and certain freedoms. So, he must be like a demigod. I mean, I'm sure all the, you know, in villages, and it's a poor area where he's from. But, hey, the justice system didn't give him any favors. They treated him like a random citizen of any country, and they nailed him. So I was pleasantly surprised that he got what he got. You know what I mean? I was thinking they could draw it out and then maybe he would wiggle his way with big attorneys. You know what I mean? But they nailed
right.
it. Rightfully so, they got his ass. It's terrible. I mean, I hate, you know, when it's, you know, assault, DUIs, those are like terrible, terrible things. It's a whole lower level to me. A worse, even worse when it's, you know, taking advantage of kids or minors. So it's like, you know, it's like the trafficking thing. Just think about that. You don't have to be, he wasn't going over like Mexico or US border with 12-year-olds. Like these terrible shows we see in like America's Most Wanted. That's still trafficking. Mm-hmm. What he did is still trafficking. I don't care if he's a star on TV. That's just as bad. So yeah, he was trafficking legally and technically. So yeah, long story short. Yeah. I'm really glad he got nailed. One less creep, walking free.
Yeah, now according to the Washington Post, he is scheduled for trial on August 14th, according to the Washington Post here. So, I mean, obviously, it would just based off of the evidence and everything, and also the fact that the mother is being charged as well. The mother of the 14-year-old girl is being charged as well. I would find it hard to believe that Franco walks away from this, that he walks away unscathed. Not just that, but also the fact that he has now been placed on the restricted list and has been taken off of administrative leave, that tells me right there that Major League Baseball has received enough evidence that, you know, the Rays can basically wipe their slate clean off of his entire contract.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, in that case, you know, there's a shit ton of money that's coming off of their books in this case. Considering he was set to receive a total of $182 million through 11 years. So they're going to have a lot of money in the future to work with when it comes to trying to put together a contender once again.
And just imagine, just like back to like a baseball, like a sports standpoint, that we all know that team never doles out that kind of money. It's like the one time they go all in, the guy turns into Hannibal Lecter. So they're going to be a little bit gun shy.
Hello?
Hey.
Alex, I think you might have broken up.
Okay, I was just saying, you know, from a baseball standpoint, the Rays never spend money. And, like, the one time they go all in, the guy turns into a total criminal. So they'll probably get even cheaper from now on. The Rays are the gun shy now.
Well, yeah, you know what? That actually brings up an interesting question. I mean, let's go over to you, Chris. Do you think this potentially will cause the Rays to be a little more shy when it comes to investing so much money in baseball talent in the future? Chris, you there? He may have stepped away potentially from the phone. Let's go over to you, Lou. What are your thoughts on that scenario? You know, could this be a little bit of a prelude to maybe perhaps the Tampa Bay Rays may be a little more gun shy when it comes to investing so much money in talent now?
Yeah, I think it might be a little bit of a blow to the Rays. I mean, you know, they've been competitive for so long now, and now it's like they're taking a little bit of a backseat here. And if this year's been any indication, I think it's going to be a tough ride for quite a while here.
It's not their year. I mean, and for that point also, you got to for this year it's a wash anyways. Even if he came back this year, I mean, you're talking about the Springs, McClanahan, Rasmussen, they're missing. Shane Boz just came back. They were literally missing 80% of their pitching staff. If you think about that, if the Mets, you know, Giants, Yankees, any team like that, they were facing such an uphill climb to be competitive this year. But, I mean, this is just a huge – this is bigger than any baseball staff. I mean, they're going to go from just – they're just so money-strapped. I think they'd love to be able to spend money, and they finally went all in. Kind of how the small market Brewers went in with their center fielder Churio, and to have this huge arrest, this huge controversy. Yeah, Steve. I mean, I think they're going to rely on their farm more than ever, and they're going to be a little bit tighter on the wallet, as if they already aren't tight. It's just a terrible incident.
Here's the thing, though, Alex, is that this guy came up through the farm.
Yeah, yeah. He was really, like, no BS. He really was, like, the guy was just getting started. He was already putting up all-star numbers. They were saying he's going to be, like, you know, at least, like, a better version of Lindor. Like, an A, you know, like, maybe not top five, but, like, maybe a top 10 player in the world. That's how good he was supposedly going to be. And they know how to scout. We can all say, you know, they're not quite good enough to win it all, and they don't have any money, but the Rays damn sure know how to scout. So that's why I think they backed up the Brinks truck for him. And they haven't done that to, you know, for David Price or Carl Crawford or any of those big guys. They've had some great homegrown talent since they started their franchise. So it just goes to show. I mean, I think they, you know, they really fell in love with this guy. They don't like paying, and they paid him everything they had. So now they're just going to be like, wow, kind of burned. Like, they're not going to be reaching for that checkbook anytime soon, I don't think. They already have such a hard time with the money there. So I just hope he gets 20 years. I always root for the underdog Rays, and I got family out there. But, I mean, I hope Franco, you said, what, 20 years is the sentence?
Yeah, that's just for the trafficking charge. Now,
wow.
I assume the other charges that they're talking about, I believe it's 2 to 5 years per charge, but I could be wrong because it didn't specify specifically.
God, and the guy was like openly,
yeah,
you know, on text and Facebook, whatever. Just you never want to do any of that shit. But the guy was literally like burying his own grave, like writing out all the evidence for the cops to just arrest him. Like you described it really well, Steve. What, like a month ago, maybe we were talking about it on a Saturday night, where he was saying like, "You are now mine," like just basically like telling the world that he had kidnapped her and like holding her hostage almost. There you go, trafficking. It's just disturbing, dude. The guy deserves every second of jail time he gets.
Oh, definitely.
I think the Rays should do background checks on his players.
Well, you would think, the teams would do that.
Yeah, he's so young. He doesn't. Some people just, you know, it's not like he's 58, suddenly getting nailed for something massive. Like the guy's, he's what, like 23 years old. They probably just, he was probably on good behavior, or maybe, you know, maybe he was doing stuff, and they started sensing that right after he signed the contract. We'll probably never. They won't admit that, but they never see. You know, it's not like they don't often have players that are getting arrested or even getting busted for steroids. So it's like from that standpoint, they're pretty like clean, reputable organization. No one's perfect. I mean, this doesn't help at all, but I don't think any pro team wants people to act out like that. That's for sure. But you know what I mean? They're not a team that like takes risks on questionable characters that I've seen before. I think you just,
right.
I think they probably just fell off their chair when they found out the news. I mean, it's a shocking story. I think he had a clean record. I mean, they drafted him when he was like 18 years old, 17 years old, or they signed him from the DR. So probably just finally came to life.
Right.
I doubt they would give him that massive contract if they heard rumors or knew what he was really doing. I think this all happened after they gave him the contract, I think. Pretty sure.
Well, no, because if you remember, it came out of nowhere. It came out of nowhere, like literally.
Wow.
One day right after one of the games had ended, it came out on social media. You know, there was a girl who, honestly, let's be perfectly honest. When we looked at the, or when I remember sending you the video.
You texted me. Yeah, you sent me that on Facebook.
I remember sending you the video, and the girl looked like she was 18 or older. And, you know, she had like a kid with her and everything. And apparently that was supposedly the 14-year-old girl.
Yeah, and without that evidence, then it goes into, well, she told a perp, a criminal can always say, well, she told me she was 18. That's their cover. But then he hung himself, and rightfully so. It came out that she was 14. I remember that, though. You sent me that info on Friday or Saturday. And he had been missing a couple of games. They had him on some restricted list. Like, he wasn't traveling with the team, so something was going on. And then, boom, all those allegations surfaced. Yeah, what a wild story.
Right.
Very unfortunate. Unfortunate story, to say the least.
Now, it has been mentioned as well that Major League Baseball is not going to do – I mean, they've already put him on the restricted list, but they're not going to do any sort of punishment yet. That is assuming that if he even – if there's any slim chance in hell that he ends up walking away from this with no wrongdoing – I say a very slim chance in hell. But I mean, it's very possible that, like I said, that he has played his last game in Major League Baseball, even if he is proven innocent.
Yeah, and we've even seen
because
that guy like
it's a stigma. Power. It's a stigma that will stick to him.
Exactly. There's a 99%. You nailed it, Steve. I mean, I agree. Like, there's a 99.7 maybe chance that he's going to prison. So he'll, like, physically not be able to perform when he's 50 years old. He's not, you know, this isn't Major League with Charlie Sheen. Like, this is real baseball. He's not going to come back into the league in his 40s or 50s. And then second of all, we already saw, like you just said, the stigma. Trevor Bauer never got arrested for a damn thing. He had those sexual allegations with that woman in L.A. He's pitching in like Mexico, and no one wants to sign him. So we've seen it. Baseball's more old school, more stringent, and maybe looking the other way or giving people a second chance. Basketball, you see Miles Bridges in Charlotte beats up his girlfriend in a lobby, and almost kills her. And they give him a year suspension. Charlotte just re-signed him for $75 million. So the other sports are a little bit different. Yeah, there's no way Wander Franco is playing again in MLB. I don't think so.
No.
Yeah.
With that being said, though, we do also have the MLB All-Star Game that is set to take place coming up here. And needless to say, I mean, we've been kind of – I know we were debating back and forth earlier today of who has the better roster, the American League or the National League. This is how it currently lines up. As far as to when it comes to the – first off, the elected starters – now, that doesn't necessarily mean that these same people are going to start, you know, based off of injuries and whatnot. But first, for the American League, these were voted in officially by the fans. At center, you have Adley Rutschman of the Baltimore Orioles in his second All-Star Game appearance. At first base, you have Vladimir Guerrero Jr. of the Toronto Blue Jays in his fourth All-Star Game appearance. At second base, you have Jose Altuve from the Houston Astros in his ninth All-Star Game appearance. Third base, you have Jose Ramirez of the Cleveland Guardians, who is in his sixth All-Star Game appearance. Gunnar Henderson, who was, many say, was snubbed last year for the All-Star Game. He is making his All-Star Game debut at shortstop. In the outfield, you have Aaron Judge of the New York Yankees with his sixth appearance, as well as Juan Soto of the New York Yankees with his fourth appearance, followed by Stephen Kwan of the Cleveland Guardians with his first appearance. And by the way, you know, I looked at his stats and I'm like, why is he even in the All-Star game? And then I looked at his average. Oh, 365 average. That's why he's in the All-Star game.
He's a total sleeper. Like, he's not a big name, but yeah, dude, he's raking out in Cleveland. Totally underrated. I love what you said before, Steve, just real quick. Like, I think Duran, that's like, it's two really good players that are very, very deserving. I'd like to see Duran personally too start, but yeah, Kwan's legit. It's a tough call.
And you also have Yordan Alvarez of the Houston Astros in his third All-Star Game appearance, suiting up as the designated hitter. Over on the National League side, you have William Contreras of the Milwaukee Brewers in his second All-Star Game as the starting catcher. At first base, you have Bryce Harper of the Philadelphia Phillies in his eighth All-Star Game, followed by Ketel Marte of the Arizona Diamondbacks at second base in his second All-Star Game appearance. At third base, mm-hmm. Alec Bohm of the Philadelphia Phillies makes his All-Star Game debut, followed by Trey Turner at shortstop, also of the Philadelphia Phillies, or we can just call them the National League Phillies at this point, making his third All-Star Game appearance. In the outfield, you have Jerickson Profar and Fernando Tatis Jr., both of the San Diego Padres, as well as Christian Yelich of the Milwaukee Brewers. And at DH, you have Shohei Ohtani for the Los Angeles Dodgers. However, he will not be pitching, as obviously he's still recovering from his injury that he suffered at the end of last season, but he has still been able to hit, though. Now for the reserves. Starting in the American League, you have Salvador Perez of the Kansas City Royals for catching. First base, you have Josh Naylor of the Cleveland Guardians. At second base, you have Willy Castro of the Minnesota Twins and Marcus Semien of the Texas Rangers. At third base, you have Rafael Devers of the Boston Red Sox. However, Rafael Devers has elected to not play in the All-Star game, so he has officially been replaced by Jordan Westberg of the Baltimore Orioles. You also have Isaac Paredes of the Tampa Bay Rays at third base as well. Shortstop reserves, you have Carlos Correa of the Minnesota Twins and Bobby Witt Jr. of the Kansas City Royals. Outfielders, you have Jaron Duran of the Boston Red Sox, Riley Green of the Detroit Tigers, Anthony Santander of the Baltimore Orioles, and Kyle Tucker of the Houston Astros, but Kyle Tucker is unable to play due to his injury, so he will be replaced by Anthony Santander. You also have David Fry of the Cleveland Guardians representing the DH spot. Over in the National League, you have for catching. I'm sorry?
Somebody, that's very good.
Did somebody say something?
Oh, no, I was on mute, Steve. Probably wasn't me.
Oh, okay. At catcher for the National League reserves, you have Will Smith of the Los Angeles Dodgers. At first base, you have Pete Alonso of the New York Mets, who is looking to win his third home run derby title in the upcoming days. I believe it's Monday, right, that the home run derby is?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
You also have Freddie Freeman of the L.A. Dodgers representing first base as well. Second base, you have Luis Arias of the San Diego Padres. Third base, you have Brian McMahon of the Colorado Rockies. Representing shortstop, you have C.J. Abrams of the Washington Nationals, Mookie Betts of the Los Angeles Dodgers, but he will miss the game due to a fractured hand. And Ellie De La Cruz of the Cincinnati Reds as well. Outfield, you have Teoscar Hernandez of the L.A. Dodgers, Jackson Merrill of the San Diego Padres, Heliot Ramos of the San Francisco Giants, and Brian Reynolds of the Pittsburgh Pirates. And for DH, you have Marcell Ozuna of the Atlanta Braves. And finally, when it comes to the pitchers, first for the American League, you have Tyler Anderson representing the Angels, Corbin Burnes of the Baltimore Orioles, Emmanuel Clase of the Cleveland Guardians, Garrett Crochet of the Chicago White Sox, Logan Gilbert of the Seattle Mariners. However, Gilbert is being replaced by Andres Munoz of the Seattle Mariners due to injury. Clay Holmes representing the Yankees. That's been a little bit of a controversy there, because many Yankee fans believe that Weaver should have been chosen instead of Holmes. What do you think about that, Lou? Because I know you cover the Yankees. What are your thoughts on Holmes making it over Weaver?
Yeah, that is a little bit surprising. I mean, I thought Weaver would get the nod, but obviously the committee, whoever's hurt, saw in different directions, and That's how it's played out. So I am a little bit surprised by that. And nothing really surprised me that much, but this time it did.
I'll say something on that close real quick, too. If it's not Holmes, Weaver's awesome. I'm not taking anything away from stealing his shine. I'm not dissing Weaver at all. He's been great. Your closer, Kenley Jansen, look at the board. Numbers don't lie. I mean, he's got better stats across the board mostly than Holmes. So I thought he was a bit of a snub. And then I thought two big power bats I wanted to see. Christian Walker, Diamondbacks, he's got like 23 home runs. So he's on pace for 40 home runs maybe. He's been great. Arizona's kind of really come to life recently. Santander on the Orioles and the AL, he's got 23 home runs. Orioles are awesome. I know they already have representation. And you know, Philly's good for them. They're the best team. They look like they can take up the Dodgers long-term. But I don't know if anyone needs to see, you know, two-thirds of their team on the All-Star roster. It's a little bit extreme to me. And then lastly,
yeah,
I mean,
know,
I know it's going to come to the show, but like, lastly, Lindor, like, the Mets are red hot. I know people still don't really take him serious, but Lindor's 17 home runs, 18 stolen bases, do the math. He's on pace for a 30-30 year. He's on fire. Like, Lindor, he's some of the best stats in a while. That's the thing, though, in baseball, I think we all notice it. Like, they take the roster construction a lot more seriously. Maybe he can't get in, because, I mean, De La Cruz, Abrams, those are two of the best young players in the world. They're both National League shortstops. So it's kind of like a numbers crunch there. I was still a little, you know, I thought with Mookie Betts not there, maybe Lindor would slide in, but hey, can't have it all. So it's tough. Like,
you know,
in basketball,
not only
basketball, they'll take like seven or eight guards in basketball. They won't worry about the positions. That's what I was trying to say. But like baseball, they don't want to take four or five shortstops on a roster. So I kind of see why it's like that.
You know, not only was Kenley Jansen not getting in a surprise, but also so was Craig Kimbrell of the Baltimore Orioles not getting in.
Yeah.
That was seen as a little bit of a surprise as well.
It's just so
and
tough.
Instead, you get Clay Holmes, and I believe Clase, he's a reliever, isn't he?
Yeah, really good on the Guardians, and they're having a great season. So maybe that's it. That's a good. I think it's a good choice.
Actually, yeah, that makes sense then.
Hey, the Red Sox. No one believed in them at all, and so I thought Jansen should go. It's just so tough. It's like the NBA. There's always people that are really good on the outside looking in.
Yep.
Right. Well, actually, speaking of the NBA, there is a little controversy that we're going to get to in a little bit involving the NBA in regards to picking players, but. Yeah, you know, it was kind of surprising, I feel, that Kenley Jansen got left off when he's only blown two saves all season long. You know, he's had great numbers, but it could just be that, you know, the Red Sox already have three people going to the All-Star game, including a pitcher. So, you know, why have so many representatives from a team that's like borderline? Are they going to make the playoffs? Are they not going to make the playoffs?
It's just tough. I know, like, we were quite, you know, Lou was questioning a bit, like, with the Pirates not being good. It's just, it's like basketball, though, to me. If someone's, like, awesome, awesome player, even if their team is not even, like, hovering around 500, right? I just, like, look at the Phillies. I'm not trying to knock them too much. Like, Harper, obviously, no-brainer. Trey Turner, no-brainer. Alec Baum, just because then if we sat down for an hour, we could list 20 other players that might get in over him. You know what I mean? I don't like it when the best record teams just get awarded like extra guys. Because again, I think it's a team sport again. So
right.
I wouldn't mind if like three, you know, not three Marlins, but you get what I'm saying. Maybe two or three Pirates if they're more deserving than some guy, you know, on the Dodgers. You know what I'm saying? It's just I get annoyed because those guys, they, most of the time, they don't determine where they're playing. If they're putting up like a 30-30 season, I don't care if your team's 10 games under. You're an all-star. So that kind of rubs me the wrong way, but hey, my two cents.
Yeah. Some other players who were selected, Tanner Houck of the Boston Red Sox was selected to his first all-star game. Seth Lugo of the Kansas City Royals, who – their head coach tried to make a case for him being the All-Star starter, but yet he got lit up today by Boston. All-Star starter there. He has been selected as well, though he probably won't pitch considering he pitched today. So, although I don't know, maybe he will.
What a story, though, man. If you look at him, he has like a 2.4 ERA. He has like three or four complete games. Lugo's like 35. For like 10, most of his career, for like 10 years, he was like a really good reliever on the Mets. And he was like begging to start, and then he just went to the Royals so he could start, and now he's an All-Star. Still a pretty cool story, but yeah, he got rocked today.
Yeah. Mason Miller of the Oakland Athletics, that's one of the big names for for the trade market to keep an eye on. Mason Miller of the Oakland Athletics got named to his first All-Star team. Andres Munoz of the Mariners, as I mentioned. Cole Reagans of the Kansas City Royals was also named, as well as Tarik Skubal of the Detroit Tigers and Kirby Yates of the World Series champion Texas Rangers. Over on the National League side, you have Max Fried of the Atlanta Braves, who was named as a replacement for Ranger Suarez due to Suarez's injury from the Philadelphia Phillies. Tyler Glasnow of the LA Dodgers was also named, but he will not play due to injury, and he's been replaced by Hunter Green of the Cincinnati Reds. Ryan Helsley of the St. Louis Cardinals was named to his second appearance. Jeff Hoffman of the Phillies named to his first team. In his rookie year, Shohei Imanaga, with his 8-2 record with the Chicago Cubs, has been named to his first All-Star appearance. Reynaldo Lopez of the Atlanta Braves named to his first All-Star appearance. Chris Sale was named to his 8th All-Star appearance, but due to him starting tomorrow, Christopher Sanchez will instead replace him from the Philadelphia Phillies. And by the way, I should say it's the same thing for Gilbert, too. Gilbert isn't injured, but because he's starting tomorrow, Gilbert will be replaced by Andres Munoz. Tanner Scott of the Miami Marlins has been named to his first All-Star game. Paul Skenes of the Pittsburgh Pirates, not only was he named to his first All-Star game, he is the first number one drafted player to be drafted number one overall and then immediately make the All-Star game the very next year. The first player in MLB history to do so, and he will be starting for the National League with his 6-0 record and sub-2 ERA. Actually, it might be sub-1 if I – no, it's sub-2. It's 1.90.
Was he in the Cosmos last year?
Huh?
What's that, Liz?
Was he in the Cos World Series last year?
Yeah, with Dylan Cruz. LSU with Dylan Cruz.
Yeah, with LSU.
Who was the
with LSU, yeah.
Dylan Cruz went to the yeah, Dylan Cruz is the center fielder. He went to the Nationals. Yeah, Keynes was the starter. Yeah, the dude's like 6'6", 250. He was throwing like 102 in the sixth inning, his most recent start. The guy's just like an absolute, I don't know, machine.
Yeah, he was 10 Ks, I think. Like, college, he was named the College World Series most outstanding player that last year.
That's where I saw the name, not familiar.
Shows the power of the draft, man. MLB draft tomorrow night. I know it doesn't get all the acclaim, but Keynes is just like a can't miss, I guess. Got to stay healthy.
Wait, is it tomorrow night?
Yeah, tomorrow. I just read it myself, Steve. It's like usually not an afterthought, but it's just not talked about. It's not talked about. Like,
okay,
the draft.
So there's something else I have to keep an eye on for tomorrow.
Guardians number one pick.
The Red Sox picked number 12, and there's been a heavy rumor that they're going to be taking the second baseman from Tennessee if he falls that far. Which, I mean, the dude had like 38 homers last year or this year for Tennessee.
Tennessee have a reasonable team.
Well, they're obviously, you know, they're the Tennessee Volunteers. but for college.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and Steve, I was reading something.
Yeah, the most recent mock draft has him slipping to 12 at the Red Sox.
I was reading something earlier on it because it came to my attention. I totally forgot about the draft, that it's tomorrow. And there's already been a couple of moves, I guess. There's some new rule, I guess, where they can – it's almost like basketball and football where they can swap picks with players.
Yeah,
I think there was some rule before
pick.
That they couldn't do that. Yeah.
Yeah,
so teams are like moving up in the draft.
The number 39 pick was traded to the Nationals from the Kansas City Royals. The Royals acquired Hunter Harvey for third baseman Caden Wallace and the 39th overall pick. The thing is, they can trade competitive balance picks is what they can trade.
Oh, okay.
They can't trade for example, they can't trade their own first round pick. They can trade like competitive balance picks.
Right.
And those are rewarded when people leave in free agency, right? And they're at the end of the end of every round. They're at the end of every round.
Right.
Got it.
Right.
That's cool.
So,
one more sporting event for tomorrow.
I'm looking at. I had no idea that the draft was already here. But with that being said, that leaves me something to keep an eye on tomorrow.
I just found out a couple hours ago. I was like, wow, it's tomorrow. I just noticed myself.
I've heard rumors that Boston might be taking a pitcher. Just based off of Craig Breslow's comments, but I hope if that second baseman somehow falls to them, Jim seems to think that he won't, but if that second baseman somehow falls, or God forbid if Hagen Smith from Arkansas somehow falls all the way down the board to number 12, I'd love for them to take Hagen Smith. The dude is a fucking fireball when it comes to pitching.
I've been reading about him from Jim from his Facebook post on Sports Whispers. That guy looks lethal. You don't want to call him a scheme, but he does. He looks like an ace potentially.
He is.
MLB ace. MLB ace. Yeah.
He's considered to be the best pitcher in the draft.
Nice. And I'm not sweating him. I'm only saying that because Skeens is like the biggest in like the last decade, probably. But yeah, that Arkansas guy looks awesome. I don't know. Early on, sometimes teams just pass on. You know, it's like some teams just don't know how to draft well. I guess in every pro sport, like a guy like that, if he's like a can't miss ace, he should be like a top three pick, right? You would think. I don't know. The spotting difficult.
He has 100 mile per hour fastball.
Find the guy. Wow.
He has 100 mile per hour fastball out of college.
Damn.
I mean, there's no wonder why this kid is expected to go very early in the first round here.
Like multiple-year All-Star in the making.
Hang on, I'm trying to see if I can find...
They don't advertise it. They don't advertise it half as much as the NFL or NBA draft. And hockey's gotten better, but like MLB just doesn't put a lot of hoopla, a lot of fire into it.
Here we go. Hagen Smith in the regular season, 9-2 with a 2.04 ERA and 16 games started. Opponent batting average was a stunning 144 against him. Only given up five homers, walked 34 batters, and struck out 161 in 84 innings pitched.
Wow.
I mean, that's basically elite-level status for a starting pitcher in this draft.
And taking a proven high-level, you know, big-time school college arm. They're MLB ready. Look at Skeens. Look at these guys coming in right away. He could probably pitch within six months after getting drafted. You know, versus if you take a high school arm, it's like 3 years. So that would be one of my top picks if I'm a GM. He's just top of my board.
Oh, easy, very easy. Speaking of pitchers, though, just to round out the All-Star game here, Max Strom from the Philadelphia Phillies, he's been selected to his first All-Star game. Robert Suarez from the Padres has his first. Logan Webb of the San Francisco Giants has his first. And Zach Wheeler of the Philadelphia Phillies has his second All-Star game appearance. And by the way, the starter for the American League will be Corbin Burnes of the Baltimore Orioles.
So now they've been just announced that, because when I did my show, it was not announced.
I'm just going based off, honestly, Lou, I'm just going based off of Wikipedia, and they got theirs based off of what everybody's been saying. So.
Right.
So, I mean, it looks like it's going to be Corbin Burnes representing the American League and Paul Skinnis representing the National League. So, okay. I don't know about you guys, and I'm just going based off of what I'm seeing here. I feel that the American League has the better all-around lineup, not just pitching-wise, but also position player-wise. I mean, obviously, it would be different if we saw players like Mookie Betts playing and Rafael Devers playing. But Devers, on his own volition, has decided to skip the All-Star game this year in order to focus on getting ready for a potential playoff run.
I think it's the right thing to do because that's more important.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely the right move to do, Lou. When it comes to Devers, because you want to, you know, you want to make sure all the focus is on the playoffs at this point.
Exactly.
But, in your opinion, Lou, who do you think has the better lineup between the American League and the National League?
You know, it was on paper, which. Anyways, but I'm thinking the American League has a stronger lineup this year.
All right, Alex, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, look at the first two hitters. Good luck, Skeens. Skeens is awesome. I love the guy. But his first two guys stepping into the batter box Tuesday night will be Gunnar Henderson and Juan Soto. Yeah, I mean, the American League's more diverse. They're represented from more teams, which I like, more diversity. And then, you know, you're going to have Duran come in and steal a bag and hit a double. You just have a nice array of players. You kind of nailed it before. I'm not trying to knock the Phillies. I know I'm an Eagles fan. I'm all mixed up as a Mets and Eagles fan, but I'm not knocking the Phillies too much. But yeah, it's like the Phillies versus the AL. I keep thinking of it now. Now that you said that, it's like the National League Phillies. I mean, the American League is just, there's better players from all different teams. And like Gunnar Henderson and Soto, you can argue. Gunnar Henderson and Soto might be the two best hitters this year. And they're hitting 1-2. So the AL is stacked.
Yeah, it's like the Phillies, Dodgers, and Braves, basically, versus the American League.
We've seen enough of them. We've seen enough of them in October. I know they're great teams, but, like, I'm going to be rooting for all those other players, like Duran and Gunnar Henderson. I mean, they seem, like, younger and just better all around than going to the American League.
How about you, Diane? What are your thoughts on between the American League and the National League, who do you think has the better roster?
The American League.
Thank you.
Yeah, it definitely does seem like the American League has the better all around roster when you take a look at everything. Plus, I mean, it would be a different case if the National League had Chris Sale going, if Mookie Betts wasn't injured. If Tyler Glasnow wasn't injured, you would look at the National League and say, well, maybe perhaps the National League might have the edge pitching wise. But with certain players coming out either due to injury or starting tomorrow, obviously that changes things. And not only that, but we also have the Home Run Derby. And like I said before, we have We have, what's his name, Pete Alonso, trying to win his third home run derby title after winning the event back in 2019 and 2021, joining Ken Griffey Jr. and Yoenis Cespedes as back-to-back derby champions. He did get knocked out in the first round of last summer's event. However, though, something to keep in mind, he is in the midst of a down season. Only 18 homers in 87 games after belting 40-plus in each of the past 2 years. And one of the biggest culprits in his down year has been a rise in ground ball rate amongst the league, which is something that he can't afford to carry into this home run derby if he wants to add a third title to his resume. Now, his longest home run this year has been 446 feet. Which isn't the longest out of all the competitors. The longest out of all the competitors, I believe, is Bobby Witt Jr. at 468 feet, I believe.
Wow.
Is the longest. Let me just double-check that. 430,
thanks
427.
Thanks for mentioning him, Steve. Thanks for mentioning Witt. That's another incredible young player that the American League has.
Yeah.
That's a Hall of Famer right there, unless something happens. That guy's like, we're talking 40-40. 40-40 for several years. If he keeps progressing the way he is, that guy runs and hits as good as anyone.
I mean, I'll be perfectly honest. I do think Pete Alonso has a chance, especially considering it's a free for all and it's not basically the top four home run hitters will make it to the semifinals. Out of this group, you got Gunnar Henderson, you got Alec Bohm, you got Pete Alonso, Bobby Witt Jr., Marcelo Zuna, Jose Ramirez, Adelis Garcia, and Teoscar Hernandez. And right now, Gunnar Henderson is leading the way with 27 homers. He's basically, in just over half a season, he's on the verge of surpassing his total from last year, which his total last year was 28. So, I mean, that should tell you right now, you know, what kind of groove he's in and how much he has grown. So I think Gunnar Henderson could be a very legitimate threat for the home run title this year. Also, not to mention, as I said, he did get snubbed from last year's event, too. So I think he has a chip on his shoulder potentially this year as
well.
He's
pissed off. Alonso's just kind of like, he's like, Alonso's comfortable. He's got the experience. I don't really like it. Like, I think one of you guys mentioned, I think it was Lou, maybe it was you, Steve, this afternoon, where it kind of alters their swing second half. Alonso, I mean, he just hits like 230. I can name five Mets that are having better seasons. He shouldn't be an all-star. And I can name five Mets hitters that I like better to watch, that I like, and I love the Mets. I mean, give me Nemo or Lindor, much more consistent hitters. Vientos, much more consistent hitter. Like, if it's the seventh inning and a tie game, Alonso strikes out. You'll never say that about Gunnar Henderson or Bobby Witt. So Alonso's just like a true, like, he wants to just hit a home run. He doesn't do the small things correctly. That's where it's like, Alonso is kind of like built for the Derby, where the other guys are definitely better hitters. So it's kind of an interesting group of players.
Yeah. The one thing specifically, first off, I'll just say this right now, Alec Bohm, I think you can eliminate him. Despite having a breakout season this year, it hasn't translated into homers. His ISO output is only tied for 42nd among major league hitters. So,
what are his numbers, Steve?
You know,
he's on pace for 100 RBIs, but he's not known from the minors up. I've always followed Bohm. He was a really high draft pick. He's not a home run hitter. I think he hit like 17 last year. He maybe has like 8 or 9 this year. He's a big RBI. He's a big like singles and doubles hitter. Not a home run bopper. Kind of a weird selection.
Bobby
Witt Jr. They can ask to get in. Yeah.
Bobby Witt Jr., it's worth noting that he won the high school version at Nationals Park in 2018.
Oh. He can do it.
So he was hitting, he was participating in home run derbies at the age of 18 in an actual major league park. Now, obviously, you know, he's been known mainly more, I believe, for his contact. So maybe perhaps, you know, he's more of an all-around player, and that might explain why he only has 15 homers this year. But,
yeah.
I mean, you know, Bobby Witt Jr. could potentially be a sneaky pick, potentially, when you consider the fact that, you know, it's not like he's coming into this as a rookie. He has participated in derbies at big league parks before, like Nationals Park. Now, let's see. You also have Marcelo Zuna, 23 homers. Longest one he hit this year was 446. I mean, his 23 homers are second in the National League behind only Shohei Ohtani. However, though, there's a fair amount of swing and miss in his game despite his huge numbers this year. So he does have the power to hang with anyone in the field, but he has to be incredibly locked in order to do so. So I think Ozuna could be a contender. Ramirez could potentially be a contender. However, I think his height might have a little bit of a problem, as his power plays better in games as opposed to a home run derby. Plus, he's known mainly more for his contact ability than his power. So, I mean, 23 homers, his longest is 436. So, I mean, that, I think for Ramirez, that's a little bit more up in the air. Adelis Garcia. Something to keep in mind, Garcia has home field advantage. They're playing in Globe Life Field,
if you believe
the home
that.
Of the Texas Rangers. He knows
that guy can bash with the best of them too. He's like a Rosarina. If that guy gets in the zone, he can smash a record real quick.
And he knows which parts of the field to hit it to.
Yeah, Louis just touched on that. I would put some merit behind that. Like like you said, he knows the dimensions. That can't hurt him. Garcia is dangerous. He could win it. That guy goes on heaters.
Yeah. Then you also have Teoscar Hernandez, 19 homers. His longest is 431 feet. He does have a barrel rate of 14.9% this year, which is considered to be an elite rate, and reducing his strikeout rate as well this year. However, a reduced strikeout rate is still considered one of the league's highest this year in the league, ninth most of any hitter, coming after a season of where he struck out 211 times last year, the third highest total in the majors. So that swing and a miss could basically make him the biggest boom or bust slugger in this year's field. All right, let's start off with you, Alex. I mean, just based off of all the competitors that we have here, Gunnar Henderson, Alec Bohm, Pete Alonso, Bobby Witt Jr., Marcelo Zuna, Jose Ramirez, Adelis Garcia, and Teoscar Hernandez, who do you think has the biggest chance of coming out the winner?
Overall, I'm going to go with, I think Gunner's the best pure hitter, but I think Bobby Witt with that high school experience, I'm going to go with Bobby Witt. Alonso, I want him to get humbled and actually lose, even as a Mets fan, so he can actually study and how to become a complete hitter again. I don't want him to keep winning and then keep striking out if they're going to finally be playing relevant baseball. late in the season. So I want Witt or Holiday. I'm going to go with Witt, though. He's going to win it, I think.
Well, what are your thoughts, Lou? Who do you see as potentially winning the home run derby this year?
Yeah. Well, I think I'm going to go with Alonso.
You know,
I would be thinking
Alonso, but normally there's something to take into consideration when you consider momentum. I mean, we saw it happen in 2019. When which years did Alonso win? 2019 and 2021?
Yes.
I believe so, yeah. I'm not sure, though.
Yeah, we saw the momentum that Alonso had one of those years where he was just throwing out bombs. Yeah, 53 homers that year.
Yeah,
you were wondering, like, okay, he hit his 26th home run before the All-Star, or 27 homers before the All-Star break. And you were wondering, could that potentially slow him down? And then he goes on to win the home run derby that year. And... just beating out Vlad Jr. by one homer in the final round.
Is he in it? Is Vlad in it this year? He's had a down year.
No, he's not in it this year.
Yeah,
and
honestly,
I probably would have picked Vlad Jr. to win it if he was in it.
Yeah. Yeah, he's another real freak. He can get going quickly.
Yeah, but to be honest, his low numbers kind of concern me this year for Alonso. That's why I'm probably going to go with Gunnar Henderson, because you know how it goes when it comes to momentum. Keep in mind, he's only one homer shy of tying his entire total from last year.
Uh-huh.
So, and we're only about halfway through the year. Just imagine how many more he's going to potentially hit.
Interesting to note, though, Lou's Yanks took care of him today. I mean, the Orioles, their overall team, I don't think they're in like a 4 or 5 game losing streak. I think Henderson's kind of cold right now. But talent-wise, yeah, he's as good as anyone in the world. I just don't know if that's going to affect him, but it's a great pick. I was thinking Witter, Henderson. So you got Lewis Alonso, you have Henderson, I'm going with Bobby. Diane, who'd you pick?
Diane disconnected.
Okay, Diane's going with Alonso. No, I'm just kidding.
But I'll say this. If it's not Henderson, I wouldn't
who'd
rule out Adelise Garcia.
Because
home field advantage can play a huge role if you know where to direct your shots.
Yes,
that's true. He knows it like a back of his hand.
So that's something to keep in mind. The Dodgers they continue to take even more hits as Dustin May has undergone esophageal surgery. And as so, he will not pitch again this year. As he underwent surgery earlier this week to fix a tear in his esophagus. So he will not be able to partake in any physical activity over the next 2 months as part of his recovery. As mm-hmm. such, he will not pitch again in the 2024 season. It did not occur due to any baseball-related activity, though. It was noted by Jeff Passan that May sought medical attention for pain in his throat and stomach, which eventually led to the surgery. and that basically he had felt a sudden pain while eating dinner earlier this week, according to the Los Angeles Times. He had yet to pitch this year as he was still rehabbing from a flexor tendon surgery that took place almost exactly a year ago. Unfortunately, this latest injury occurred just as May was nearing a minor league rehab assignment, as he had already been taking part in bullpen sessions and other more advanced ramp-ups as well. So, needless to say, the Dodgers, who are already injury-riddled right now, add yet another injury to their list.
Three good arms, May, Buehler, Kershaw, and Mookie and all those guys. Yep. The curse of all that free agent spending. Never like to see injuries, but not a lot of Dodger love on this show. Not a lot of love for the boys in blue on our show. I think Philly's, I don't know.
Now, remember what we talked about when I mentioned that with the New York Yankees, there was something having to do, a little controversy having to do with a player being picked over another player.
Yes.
Well, let's move over to the U.S. men's national basketball team, where there was a huge controversy with obviously Kawhi Leonard having to withdraw due to injury. He's not been able to recover from his injury. And in doing such, Derek White of the NBA champion Boston Celtics was named as a replacement. And now you may think, okay, so what's so bad about that? Well, there's a certain player who was in consideration who, let's just say, is not too friendly with Nike, who is the number one team sponsor for Team USA.
Yes.
And that is Jaylen Brown, also of the NBA champion Boston Celtics. And I was going into a discussion with Jim earlier today about this. How is it that you have so many players who could be made available, like Ja Morant, Klay Thompson? Klay Thompson is even a bigger shocker to me, considering the fact that Steve Kerr is the head coach.
Ja Morant needs to stay off of guns and strip clubs and out of prison. I mean, maybe 2 years ago, Ja Morant. How about Jalen Brunson? Brunson's on another level from Ja Morant these days.
Yeah.
There's a lot of
fun.
Brunson's
still recovering from his injury, though, I think.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I'm just not a big – Ja Morant, I like the Grizzlies. I know Jim's a Grizzly guy. I love Bane. I like that team. But, I mean, Morant's got to get his mind right and kind of have a big year to be in future consideration, I think, for an Olympic team. I mean, I couldn't imagine him on an Olympic team right now. Yeah, I mean, I thought Jaylen Brown got – I was reading it a little bit on your Facebook exchange with Jim. I always love your guys' opinions. Do you think it was really because of Nike that they kept – that they kind of slapped Jaylen in the face and named his teammate?
Yes.
It's weird.
Yes. Jaylen Brown has a standing feud going on with Nike over comments that he had made previously involving Nike. And he hinted earlier this week at foul play. He's not the only player who has gone against Nike. Ennis Freedom, formerly known as Ennis Cantor, called out Nike for being corrupt.
Yeah.
And saying they operate like a mafia.
Not a good career move.
Mafia.
So, basically, when he was drafted by the Celtics back in 2016-2017, he had signed a deal with Adidas So, yeah, he had signed a sneaker deal with Adidas, and he wore Adidas kicks for the first five seasons of his career until the contract expired in 2021. He's been playing as a sneaker free agent for the past three seasons. In that span, he's mostly worn Nike's Kobe Bryant signature line with a few other brands like New Balance mixed in. But after Kyrie Irving was dropped from the brand for posting many things that were viewed as anti-Semitic on social media back in 2022, he spoke out against Nike during the controversy, talking about, since when did Nike ever care about ethics?
Wow.
And basically, you know, since then he's continued to wear the Kobe's more often than not, but he made a more notable cosmetic change this year. This year, he wore a variety of the Kobe shoes, with the Nike swoosh completely removed from his shoe. Now, Brown seems to think that it's because that he was left off of Team USA because of his grudge against Nike.
There could be an argument there. I like both of you guys' points, by the way, you and Jim. Grant Hill is always a smart guy. I know, and he's a nice guy, too. He's usually not a dishonest, shady guy. I mean, he's got a great reputation, right? He's, like, in charge of – he takes the brunt of all the criticism. He's the one man, really, the guy who puts together the roster. He's, like, basically their GM. He was saying he took Derek White because they already have enough scoring, pretty much, right? He's selfless. He plays defense.
Yeah.
So they wanted to add Derek White because of that. I understand that, too. You don't want to have 12 guys trying to score 40. You can't have 12 guys trying to score 40 points a night. You got to have some guy who's going to pass the ball and play defense. So that's kind of – it fits in. It balances the roster.
Yeah.
A guy like White.
What are your thoughts on this, Lou?
I was going to say, how do you, you know, I mean, you got Kevin Durant and then replaced by White. I mean, you know, what kind of an impact is he going to have? And, you know, how well are they going to do, you know, without Durant and without White coming in? I mean, will he be as dominant?
Kawhi Leonard.
I don't know. Think so? Don't think anything will be different? I mean, because we got some good competition, you know, this year. You know,
it is worth noting that Kevin Durant may have to he may have to drop out.
I wouldn't be surprised by that
due to injury.
But I mean, guys, look how many scores did the Celtics or did the old Dream Team or the Bulls back in the day or the Lakers and Showtime or you know?
I think just Lakers I think just one right wasn't it?
Lakers
wasn't it just
Lakers Bird? Could beat anyone. Yeah, I mean, well,
yeah.
Oh, that Bird, McHale, yeah, but, like, yeah, so, but, like, you got to have defense, and then the biggest thing to me is you don't need, like, seven or eight incredible scores. They already have LeBron. They have Steph Curry. Who else? Tatum, obviously. You got to have some defense, too. I know Tatum plays some D, but, like, I don't think they're really going to miss. I think they have more than enough scoring to beat people by 20, 30 points. So might as well add a defender like Derek White. He doesn't need to score to be happy and to be productive and a positive for the team. So
no,
I don't mind this selection. And just like the All-Star snubs, there's always going to be people pissed off. There's always going to be fans saying, oh, my guy deserves it. But
you kind of take a look at some of the other names. Jim brought up a whole bunch of other names. You know, Jaylen Brown, Jalen Brunson, Ja Morant, Jaren Jackson Jr., Klay Thompson. Thompson, in my opinion, was the bigger shocker because Steve Kerr is the head coach. How do you not have as many Golden State Warriors on that team as possible? As many Golden State Warriors, what's it called?
Well, Grant makes the decisions. Apparently, that's what Grant Hill's saying. He's saying, "Oh, it's blame me. I'm the guy who makes the call." I don't know. I don't mind it. They needed more defense. They have so much scoring. Although Canada played them pretty good. What was that, a scrimmage the other day?
Yeah.
I haven't really been following it that much.
You talk about defense, but at the same time, Jaren Jackson Jr. is 1 year removed from Defensive Player of the Year.
He would be a good add, too. They, well, big men, they have Embiid and they have Anthony Davis, so those guys will be rotating. That's damn good. But, yeah, you can never have enough size. Jackson, you go Twin Towers, you could play him with Embiid a little bit, him with Davis a little bit. Jackson would be good. I like him a lot, too.
But, I mean, you got James Harden.
Yeah,
you got. I mean, let's face it. Harden doesn't play defense,
no
period.
Way.
But,
no way.
You know,
he's the opposite of an Olympic player. Harden's a playground guy. Harden would piss off his teammates if he played there. He'd be jacking up threes all day.
I mean, yeah. I'm surprised Kyrie Irving didn't make it, considering LeBron. You know how much control and power LeBron has over basketball decisions.
Yes,
I'm surprised that his best buddy Kyrie didn't make it. I mean, then you have other. You have other players like Trae Young, Damian Lillard, Donovan Mitchell. Though I think Mitchell might still be injured. De'Aaron Fox,
right.
Tyrese Maxey. I mean, it does make you wonder. Why choose Derek White over another player like Jaylen Brown, or I understand Brunson because Brunson's injured, but Jaylen Brown literally just won the finals MVP. He literally just won the finals MVP, and you're going to keep him off of Team USA over a beef with your number one sponsor.
Yeah, and you can take – there's nothing wrong. People aren't going to be pissed if you take two off a world champion team. That'd be fine. If I had one, I've always said I'd take Brown. But Tatum's already there. Brown should be there. His beef, though. So now I see what you're saying. You're saying it's crazy that you think Nike purposely is doing it to piss off Brown by taking his teammate.
That makes sense. That adds another layer.
Because if you're going to take another Celtic.
That almost tells me that the plan was going to be to bring in Brown, but because Nike has an issue with him, they decided, well, let's just bring in his teammate, Derek White.
Yeah.
Like, talk about
it's controversial.
To the face.
Yeah. We shall see. I mean, I'd be surprised if White's not going to play a lot either. You can't play all these guys either. Think about it. It would be like if MLB had an Olympic team. If White's the fifth outfielder, Derek White would be like a fifth or sixth outfielder, like a second string outfielder. How much are you going to play? He's going to pinch it. He'll play 5 minutes versus Serbia, 4 minutes versus Canada. You're not going to see a lot of Derek White. But it's more like the pride, the legacy. Jaylen Brown's going to be pissed. He wants to, wear that jersey. So it's more of, an ego thing,
which I
get. But you can't piss off Nike and then expect
to get it. I guess it makes sense, though. I guess it makes sense because they probably wanted more of a role player, and maybe they were worried that if you bring in a bona fide star like a Jaylen Brown or a Kyrie Irving, they would bitch about
too many shooters.
How much playing time they're getting.
Ball hogging. Yeah, you can't do that. They need role players. You can't have 12, guys that are going to just try to jack up 20, 30 shots. Got to have guys a guy like Derek White kind of useful. Can't just have, the 12 best scorers.
Yeah.
Jared Jackson would be a good pick. I like Jim's guy. I know you guys like him, too. He's a great defender. You couldn't go wrong with him. Now it makes sense. I think they took Derek White just to piss off Jaylen Brown. But Derek White plays D, so it's confusing. There's good arguments on both sides. So, but yeah, Jaylen Brown should be pissed. But if you're talking shit about the boss, the boss isn't gonna invite you to the big party, which is the Olympics. So
yeah,
you kind of do this yourself.
You
can't piss off. Yeah.
I'll tell you one thing. One player to keep an eye on moving forward: Cooper Flagg of Duke.
Yeah, he's awesome.
This kid shooting or landing threes over Anthony Davis in a scrimmage where Team
He's
USA
awesome.
Just barely beat the select team 74-73 with Cooper Flagg leading the way. If this kid is already standing up to NBA players, bona fide NBA stars, and impressing them on such an elite level, how much damage is he going to do at Duke?
Yeah, no, you can say, man. I mean, literally, I've been reading a lot about this guy for a couple of years now. It's like since LeBron, the next huge, like, can't-miss guy was Wembanyama. Really, Victor, and then really no one in this draft, quite frankly, is going to be, like, a guaranteed superstar. This guy, like, I guess there's teams already, like, tank for Cooper Flagg. Like, the Trailblazers. Like, there's a couple teams out there that might – that are already salivating at the chance to maybe take him number one. That would have no problem kind of tanking to get him. That's how good this guy's apparently going to be. Duke just got him. He was supposed to go to UConn, but Duke got him over UConn. There's a couple other teams too, but, yeah, this guy's going to be, like, I guess, quote-unquote, the next big thing, next draft.
We hope.
What are your thoughts, Lou?
Been in the high school and the college ranks and stuff, but I think we might be, you know, making a big time, maybe a little bit too soon. I mean, let's see how he does a Duke first in his first year, and then see if the NBA is, get interested. You never know. Transition from high school to college, it's a totally different level. I mean, he was a superstar in high school in Florida, but, now he's up to the next level, and he has to step it up. I mean, yeah, it'd be great if you can do it in 1 year and be eligible for the NBA, but, let's see how he does transitioning, at least how he does at Duke. I mean, Duke is a very powerful basketball school, and if he's going to make an impression on the NBA, he's really going to have, a great freshman year.
Yeah, but at the same time, Lou, I think it says something, the fact that he's putting up such a performance against bona fide NBA stars who are trying to play at a high level in these practices.
Yeah.
The fact that he led his team to within 1 point of almost upsetting the main squad. He got so much praise from LeBron James, from Jaime Jaquez, Anthony Davis, pretty much all the stars from not just
Durant
the team, but also from the actual Olympic team. You know, the fact that he's hanging with NBA stars already without even having played a single game of college ball. Just imagine he's going to be probably levels above other college stars next year.
Yeah, huge for his confidence too. So he's already showing he could play with the best. But again, like Lou, I like both your points. I think though, like Lou said, he's got to do it for a season or at least several weeks. One scrimmage is awesome with the Dream Team. Maybe they partied the night before. They're kind of hanging out, just like getting the band back together. I don't know if they were going. I didn't see the scrimmage. I saw a couple highlights. He looked incredible. But when he's playing against Arkansas or UConn or Kentucky. I want to see him putting up 30 points and grabbing 15 rebounds and playing deep into March Madness. I think he will. But, yeah, he's still got to prove it more than a scrimmage. But, I mean, did you guys see the highlights? He looks like he does it all. He's like
six-eight,
6'9", and he can shoot, and he's got, like, crazy dunking ability. The guy's got it all. He definitely passes the eye test.
I mean, I'll tell you right now, based off of the obviously we just had the NBA draft and you saw the video packages for Zachary Risacher and Alexander Sarr, for example, two picks in the
much
draft.
Much better.
Yeah.
Not even close.
I saw more out of Cooper Flagg than I saw out of those two guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were saying for months this draft didn't have, like, that it player, like a guaranteed all-star guy. Flags that guy. He should be. Like, no-brainer number one if he had gone this year. We'll see. Yeah. Speaking of those guys, did you see the highlights? I mean, Risacher looks like he's just, like, a pretty good player. I don't know. This draft was weird. Didn't seem like a number one pick to me. Very early, though. It's only summer league. Oh, shit, the Blazers are on. I was missing that game. Darn it. I wanted to see Klingon. Kling Kong.
Yeah, but I'll tell you right now, just based off of what I got to see out of Cooper Flagg, I can see why there's hype for him being the number one pick next year.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, this kid.
Yeah.
This kid is on a different. He's going to be seeing, now that he's gotten to play with NBA stars, he's going to be seeing the college game on a completely different level compared to any of the other college players that he's going to be playing with or playing against.
Yes, sure. Confidence through the roof after that. Play with LeBron and KD, you can play against UConn or Arkansas or any team out there. You're going to hear it by the All-Star break. You'll hear tank for flag. You'll see some of these bottom younger rebuilding teams like the Blazers. That'll be a hashtag during the year, tank for flag. He's all but a lock to be the number one pick already. And that the college season hasn't even started. So unless he like nosedives, the guy should really be a instant day one really good player in that hit, I think. It seems like he should be.
Well, and the thing that's scary too is he's only getting young, he's only going to improve.
Oh heck yeah, yeah.
You know, he still has a little bit of growing to do.
Yes.
Why'd you have to go to Duke, Cooper? Come on. Of all the places.
Well, hey, there's a long term history there.
University. In a UConn, the weird UConn, like random UConn Blazer connection. He's really good friends with Donovan Klingon. Their moms are like best friends. So UConn had him in for like this huge visit. They thought he was theirs, and then he flew to Duke next, and then Duke got him. Almost went to UConn. Yeah, he's going to be a great player, man. It looks like it.
It's worth noting, too, he is the first college player in over a decade to be invited to the select team, which typically is comprised of young NBA players brought in to scrimmage Team USA ahead of the Olympics and the World Cups.
Wow.
Speaking of which, the USA, they opened up their showcase with an 86-72 win over Canada. After starting off slow, they did get their offense underneath them, and also, not to mention, they tightened up on defense the further along they went. In particular, some of the stat lines, Devin Booker finished 4 of 6 shooting, 3 of 4 from. Oh, okay. This is very confusing. Hang on. So I'm going to need to decipher the way they have these stat lines. Like, it doesn't say exactly how much points they had. They go based off of how many 2 points did they land, how many 3 points did they land. So Devin Booker finished with 9 points, I think. 9 points, 2 rebounds, 2 assists. LeBron James finished it. Wow, LeBron, kind of terrible. Only 6 points for LeBron. 6 points,
wow.
5 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 steals and a block in 19 minutes. Joel Embiid finished with 4 points, 6 rebounds, 2 assists. Steph Curry, he had, looks like, 11 points, 2 rebounds, 3 assists. Jrue Holiday finished with 11 points, 4 assists, and 5 rebounds to go along with 2 blocks as well, as far as the starters go. Off of the bench, your main contributors were Anthony Edwards with 13 points, 3 rebounds, 1 assist. Anthony Davis with 10 points, 10 points, 11 rebounds, and 2 assists, along with 4 blocks and 2 steals. Tyrese Halliburton, only 2 points in 20 minutes off of the bench. 2 points, four rebounds, six assists, four steals, and a block. Jason Tatum with 8 points to go along with two assists, one rebound, one steal, and one block. Bam Adebayo with 6 points, seven rebounds, and no assists. So, I mean, basically from Team USA, I mean, those numbers don't really stick out that much, quite frankly.
Everyone can beat you. They're all going to share the ball. I mean, I think it's a good sign, personally. You don't want one guy with 30 points. Like, everyone, because everyone can nail it. Everyone can stab you with a dagger in the fourth quarter. Like, you know, LeBron could go off for 30 if he wanted to. They're just kind of, I don't want to say playing with their food, but they're just sharing the ball. It's good to have that balance, you know? I mean, if it's a close game, you're going to see, like, Steph, LeBron, who the hell else? I keep forgetting. There's so many good players. Booker could go off. Tatum. They have so much talent, dude. But Embiid could go off. Like, they have so much scoring. Who else did really well besides Cooper Flagg? Anyone else? Like, Jaime Jacquez, the Heat guy? Did they have the Cooper Flagg?
Well, he only played in the scrimmage. He didn't play in the actual competition.
Warm-up game. Gotcha. That was
Canada,
the Canada one then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
From Team Canada, RJ Barrett led the way with, looks like, 12 points, 5 rebounds, 1 assist. Dylan Brooks with 10 points, 2 rebounds, 2 assists.
5 technical.
Dwight Powell only 2 points off of free throws. So Dwight Powell barely did anything. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, 10 points, 4 rebounds, 1 assist. Jamal Murray had 5 points, 5 rebounds, and 0 assists. And then off of the bench, you had Kelly Olynyk, who had, I believe, 9 points, 3 assists, and 1 rebound. Trey Lyles with 4 points, 4 rebounds. I mean, the numbers seem really skewed, quite frankly, because, you know, obviously with Olympics, you're not going to be seeing – You're not going to be seeing one player completely take over.
No.
I saw the game a little. Brooks was, of course, like terrorizing, like harassing LeBron James. Yeah, it's just USA should be able to rock everyone. We'll see, though. Maybe someone will figure out.
Yeah, obviously we'll see. Yeah, obviously we'll see. Their next game is scheduled for Monday at noon as they take on Australia in Abu Dhabi. That'll be on Fox Sports 1. Huh?
Is that our time or their time?
It says Eastern Daylight Time, so I assume it's our time.
Okay. I guess it's ours.
At least that's what I'm going off of here, at least. They play the 15th against Australia, then the 17th against Serbia, and the 20th against South Sudan, followed by the 22nd against Germany. And then, of course, the Olympic Games kick off on the 28th.
Yes.
So, I mean, honestly, just based off of, I think it's a good sign, the fact that obviously the offense will come to its own.
I agree.
You know, I think it's a good sign that we're starting to see the defense lock in.
Yeah, for sure. They don't want to turn it into like an all-star game or like a pickup game where they're just kind of showing off and throwing alley-oops and stuff. They got to play smart basketball just to make sure they don't slip up. because a Canada team or a team like that or someone else might come up hungrier and, you know, at least playing close. They gotta go in there and stay focused and work hard. You know, don't turn it into like a show-off contest.
Now, it is worth noting that Kevin Durant is out with a calf strain. Steve Kerr did say that he isn't likely to play on Monday against Australia due to the calf strain. However, if he has yet missed in a Team USA practice at all since straining his calf while working out 2 weeks ago, and if they do have to replace him, Jaylen Brown is rumored to be on the short list of of potential replacements. And it is worth mentioning. It is worth mentioning
Jaylen,
that the team,
tonight.
Yeah.
It says the Team USA brass felt that they needed a defensive-minded guard at the point of attack in the event of injury or foul trouble, and that White was considered to be a better fit for that than Brown. Which, I mean, I guess that makes sense because Brown is honestly more of a wing as opposed to a defensive guard.
Yeah, and Steph Curry, is he starting? He's a little older. Injuries, maybe. And then we all know Steph, awesome player. He doesn't play much defense. So White's a good kind of change of pace guy off the bench just to have in case. So it kind of makes sense. But, yeah, Brown can be pissed. But Brown kind of shot himself in the foot with all those comments. I was joking, like, hopefully he's apologizing to someone at Nike. I'd still like to see him get in, but I don't know. I'm not mad that Derek Webber is.
And by the way, Team USA is currently favored at -390 to win the gold medal in the Paris Olympics.
Wow.
So right now, it really seems like Vegas really likes them as the heavy favorites right now, from what it sounds like.
Yeah, four times the favorite versus anyone else. So
yeah,
heavy favorites. I think they should. Lou, you think they'll have any? You guys think they'll have any problem, or just sweep the whole thing and win it all?
I mean, France could potentially give them a problem, I think. With Wembanyama and Gobert. Granted, those are the only two big threats that France really has, but it could give them some type of problem potentially. But otherwise, I would consider USA to definitely be the favorites. It would be a big surprise with all the talent that's on that roster. All of the biggest stars. All of the biggest stars of the NBA. Right now for Team USA, it would be a pretty big surprise if USA doesn't come out of here with the gold.
When's that kickoff against Steve? You said the 28th? Or no, sooner than that. Or is it the 28th?
Yeah, July 28th.
Okay, cool.
That's
when they start, but the actual will start before that, of course.
Cool. Okay.
Just to clarify.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir.
We do have the ESPY Awards that officially took place earlier this week on July 11th. And, I mean, I'm just going to get this right out of the way. The biggest controversy of the night, the Pat Tillman Award for Service, going to Prince Harry, Duke of Sussex, who has absolutely nothing to do with sports.
He played ping pong. I kid. Yeah, that's a little bit of a head scratcher.
Yeah, it's... Needless to say, especially with it being the Pat Tillman Award, and we remember Pat Tillman, who of course lost his life overseas while playing for the Arizona Cardinals. I mean,
has anyone explained? I didn't watch the ESPYs. Has anyone explained why exactly he got the award? I have nothing wrong with the guy. There's no connection to sports, like you said. But like you said, it doesn't make any sense at all.
He's a former member of the military. He's a former member of the military, and yep. I guess he played rugby at one point or something.
Yeah, he did a couple. He did a couple of missions in Afghanistan overnight, where they obviously didn't tell anyone he was doing it. But I guess, yeah, that's a connection. Yeah, it's not really athletic.
He played rugby at one point. And
he was there to get the award, right? Was he there to get the award?
I think so, yeah.
Gotcha. Huh.
Some of the other honorary awards that were given out, the Jimmy V Award, which goes to the deserving member of the sports world who has overcome great obstacles through perseverance and determination. That went to Don Staley, the head coach of the South Carolina Gamecocks women's basketball team. The Arthur Ashe Courage Award presented to basically presented to individuals whose contributions transcend sports. That went to Steve Gleason, the former football safety of the New Orleans Saints, who is, for anybody who isn't aware of Steve Gleason, he's been dealing with ALS over the last, like, 13 years or something?
Oh, wow.
He played for New Orleans from 2000 to 2006. Where he was known particularly for his block of a punt, which became a symbol of recovery in New Orleans in the team's first home game after Hurricane Katrina. And that basically, that turned him into a glorified hero out in New Orleans. He basically became a symbol for that year's team. So he took the Arthur Ashe Award. The Muhammad Ali Humanitarian Award. We all know what's been going on in Maui with the volcanoes and everything.
Yes.
Very worthwhile. The Maui surfing community took home that award. The Sports Humanitarian Team of the Year Award went to the Angel City Football Club, which is a team in the National Women's Soccer League. The Icon Award. I mean, come on. Given out to a sports icon. This year it was Nick Saban. And I mean, come on, such a legend that he is in college sports. I mean, I don't know who else they could have given it to. Maybe Belichick, but... and the Stuart Scott Inspire Award went to Bryce Christensen. I don't know what that's for, particularly. But those are... What is it for, Lou?
Best use of the word booyah? No, I'm kidding. Well, that was a trademark.
Who knows? Maybe it has something to do with behind the scenes. I don't know. But considering Stuart Scott, was a longtime ESPN employee, maybe it has to do with somebody behind the scenes, potentially. We did have multiple categories for awards this year. First off, for the best athlete in men's sports, Patrick Mahomes, a.k.a. the Magic Man, took home the ESPY over Shohei Ohtani, Scottie Scheffler, and Connor McDavid. I mean, all four are worthy winners, potentially, but I think Patrick Mahomes was probably the right move. For the best athlete in women's sports, it went to Asia Wilson of the Las Vegas Aces over Caitlin Clark, Coco Gauff, and Nelly Korda. I know everybody's going to be all up in arms that Caitlin Clark didn't win, but I mean, come on, they take if it was a college specific award, which I mean, she did win the best college athlete. Award, but if it was a specifically college, then yeah, she probably would have won. But if this is the best all-around athlete Asia Wilson. I mean, she was the MVP last year. So that, I think that says it all right there. You win the MVP, you're going to win, you're going to win the best athlete award. The best breakthrough athlete, Juju Watkins of USC's women's basketball team. And you know what? I took a look at her stats, and I was kind of thinking, why didn't it go to CJ Stroud or Victor Wembanyama? I took a look at Juju Watkins' stats. Now I know why it went to Watkins. 27.1 points per game, 7.3 rebounds, and 3.3 assists in 34 games played for USC this year.
As a freshman.
Yeah. I mean, talk about the best breakthrough athlete. That's a pretty big statement that you're making as a freshman.
Yeah, and call me whatever you want. I'll take it. I like when it's not going to be 19 guys and like two girls. It's going to be, hey, when it's a toss-up, give it to a good female athlete. I'm all for it. She deserves it, Joe. It's not just because of whatever gender. Yeah, I mean, her stats were awesome. I like Stroud. Ben Wambion is awesome. But, yeah, I mean, her stats were the best, I think, out of the group.
Let's see. The best comeback athlete went to Simone Biles out of gymnastics.
Yeah.
You know, I honestly would have – I mean, gymnastics is a whole entire different sport. I guess maybe perhaps they gave it to her because racism alert. You gotta keep the black crowd happy at some point.
Right.
I honestly thought Joe Flacco would have taken it, in my opinion. I thought Joe Flacco would have taken it.
Good
considering
guess.
The year that he had this year.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Joe was phenomenal.
The reason why I made that comment was you had the Venus, you had the Williams sisters. One of the Williams sisters was hosting. You had them make this whole entire comment along with another black woman, made these comments about women in sports and everything, specifically black women. And then they mentioned Harrison Butker, who made those comments about women and whatnot. It's like they have to stick their noses into stuff that should just stay out of sports.
He was there.
I mean, granted Butker was wrong to make those comments, but
yeah,
it's almost like they wanted to make the ending of the show all about them, essentially.
Yeah,
that part of the show all about them.
A really divisive thing, way to end the show, like suck the room out of the room. Plus, he was there too. It's like, wow, okay, kind of a weird way to end it. And Serena's always been about her too. She likes the spotlight. I totally agree.
That's the reason why I made that comment about Simone Biles.
No, we know who you are. It's all good. It's all good. It is what it is. I would never agree either with Butker, but there's a time and a place. You don't say it like near the end of an award show. There's no reason to say it like that publicly. I agree.
Yeah. Best college athlete went to Jaden Daniels of LSU. Specifically out of the men's. I would say I kind of agree when you consider that the only other candidate really was Zach Edey out of Purdue, and I kind of lean more towards Jaden Daniels and what he did at LSU compared to Zach Edey and Purdue, to be perfectly honest. So the best overall team went to the South Carolina Gamecocks women's basketball team after how they dominated women's basketball this year.
So UConn back-to-back. Gamecocks are awesome. Don Staley, but like, did Carolina go back-to-back too? They could have. I don't know. But, I mean, UConn went back-to-back. Shouldn't they get the edge there? I don't know. I was a little bit like, what is that?
No, they didn't go back-to-back. They lost last year, but they won in 2022.
See, that's kind of like, let's give the female side another one. I mean, I don't care if it was Arkansas or Duke or Kentucky, I'd be like, all right, they deserve it back-to-back. And I'm from Canada. I'm a UConn fan, but like back-to-back should pretty much automatically give it to you over a team that just won the first, I would think. That's
so
weird.
They beat out the Kansas City Chiefs, the Michigan Wolverines, men's football, the Las
wow.
Vegas Aces.
Wow.
The UConn.
I didn't see that.
Back to that and
Michigan
they
football,
beat out,
too. Jeez.
Yeah, they also beat out the Oklahoma Sooners in college softball. They beat out the Boston Celtics, the Florida Panthers, and the Texas Rangers.
Wow.
But I kind of agree with what you said, Alex. I think that might be more of a let's give it to the women type of thing there.
And I'm all for everyone, but yeah, that's kind of like I'll throw them the bone for no reason. Like, they're a great team, but if you can only pick one.
Right.
You still find it. I hear what you're saying. You got to come out and say it's not bad.
Right. I mean, maybe we sound a little bit sexist, but yeah. I mean, come on, just calling a spade here.
No, and we both agreed on Watkins.
I kind of agree with I kind of agree with you. How do you have a team that wins back-to-back championships and they're not considered the best team?
Yeah, I think by default, even though I'm a UConn fan, again, if it was Kentucky or Arkansas or whatever college team, if you go back-to-back, just looking at the numbers and the math, that's better than one championship. So you kind of give them the edge. And first, I mean, they were blowing everyone out just like the girls did. They were blowing out even Zach Edey, who's incredible. They won by 15 points in the championship game. I mean, back-to-back, that's got to be the team of the year. I would think,
or even insert my Boston homerism here. The Boston Celtics, the best team in the NBA the entire year, they only lost a total of 3 games in the playoffs. How are they not?
Yeah,
the winners?
Only 3.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how are they not the winners? You know, although Jaylen Brown did win best championship performance, though, which to be fair. Jaylen Brown's only real competition was Blake Corum and Will Johnson of the Michigan Wolverines. So, Jaylen Brown honestly didn't really have any competition there.
And Michigan haven't been so long from finally winning the big one with Harbaugh. I put UConn basketball, Michigan too. Maybe that girls team third.
Yeah,
that's a weird pick.
I mean, I just don't really agree with the whole. Actually,
and the Celtics,
you know,
too. I put them over
look,
that.
Let me take a look at this year's team.
I'd put the Celtics over them, too. I'd give them, like, fourth place. Carolina.
I mean,
my mom went to Carolina. I had nothing wrong with the Gamecocks. My mom went there. But they're not the team
again,
of the year.
Though, the Gamecocks were 38-0 this year.
Yes.
Yeah. It's just like such a tough vote. That's true. Yeah, it's such a tough vote. There's several deserving teams. Just like the All-Star snubs, there's always teams that are players that are deserving. I don't know. I think that back-to-back seals it, but I didn't get the vote.
I mean, I would have voted either the Boston Celtics homerism or the UConn Huskies, to be fair. That's where my vote probably would have gone.
And even if you're not a homer, I mean, you're looking at the Celtics world champions, so it's a good argument either way. It's just like, even if I'm
world
a UConn fan, they won back-to-back. Yeah.
I mean,
they're
world,
both deserving.
World champions, the best record the entire year. You know, they only lost 3 games, and not to mention how many wins of theirs were by 20 points or more this year. You know, it wasn't just they were winning. They were blowing out teams.
Yeah, it's a bank.
But that's for another day, though. The best athlete with a disability went to Brenna Huckabee, who is a snowboarding champion, a Paralympic snowboarding champion. Lou, do you know anything about Brenna Huckabee? I don't know.
Like you said, it's one of the Paralympics. Now, I've seen a few events of the Paralympics, and these are, you know, truly great athletes. You know, you have to admire their courage and their tenacity for getting where they are. I don't think I've seen her personally, but nevertheless, I mean, you know, it's a tremendous effort for these athletes who, give it their all despite their disability. I mean, I think for myself, because, you know, I did 2 New York City marathons, and nobody thought that I was going to be able to do that. Like, you're going to be crazy. I thought I was crazy myself, but, you know, you got to have the strength, you got to have the determination to do it, and that's what these athletes do. So, you know, I have to...
Oh, I see what she is. She has one leg.
Yes.
That's awesome.
She's got one leg, and she's snowboarding at a high level, winning gold medals. Wow. Okay, yeah, I can see why she would be declared the winner.
Absolutely.
She went over Jaden Blackwell, who has cerebral palsy. Ezra French, who is a high jumper, I think, who has an amputated foot.
Snowboarding with one leg, high jumping with an amputee. Those are incredible efforts. I think that's great. That's really tremendous.
And also Oksana Masters, who is a Paralympic cross country skiing and paracycling competitor. What is her disability? Oh, she has several birth defects, including tibial hemimelia, which resulted in different leg lengths, missing weight-bearing skin bones in her calves, webbed fingers with no thumbs, and 6 toes on each foot. Holy shit.
Wow.
Good for her, man.
I mean, granted, it's not as bad as losing a leg, but wait a minute, she lost both legs.
Yeah.
Wow.
Ooh.
Wait a minute. Let me see this picture. Yeah, she lost both legs. And wait a minute. What is she? She is a cross-country skier and a parasite. How did she not win?
Yeah.
Wow. Just looking at this whole thing here. Wow, that is a shocker. Best play went to Lamar Jackson for catching his own pass for a first down, which, I mean, come on. If you can catch one of your own passes, how do you not give them the award there?
That, you got a problem, buddy.
I mean, his competition was a Jada Coleman walk-off home run, sending Oklahoma to the 4th straight softball championship. Anthony Edwards with his dunk of the year, and Alabama scoring on 4th-and-31 to beat Auburn, which, okay, you know, dunk of the year, you could just say, okay, you can just call that a poster. But, I mean,
yeah.
I would say really Lamar's only real – I feel his only real threat in this category was Alabama scoring on 4th-and-31.
I'm not a Bama guy, but that was one of the most insane plays we'll ever see. So you gotta give props where they're due. That was a hell of a play.
Oh, definitely.
You can't. That's tough to top that play.
Yeah. Let's see. The best record-breaking performance, Caitlin Clark becomes the NCAA's all-time leading scorer in any sport. I mean, that speaks for itself.
Right.
She beat Christian McCaffrey, scoring a touchdown for 17 straight games. Max Verstappen winning record 10th consecutive race with victory at the 2023 Italian Grand Prix. And also beating Tara Vanderveer, who got her 1,203rd win for most by any coach in NCAA basketball history. But, you know, college sports this year was all about Caitlin Clark, so it makes sense that Caitlin Clark would get the win.
Absolutely.
It really is. It's getting a little old. I will say, though, I don't like how people are ganging up on her. I feel a little bit bad for her, but, yeah,
enough already.
And the world does not revolve around Caitlin Clark, so I don't like her getting kind of pushed around by people, but
no.
I've heard enough to last a lifetime already, and it's like her first couple months as a pro. I'm already kind of like over
right.
it. I wish her well, but I don't need to hear about her 300 times.
I don't need to hear about her
300 times a day.
She's getting the shaft, basically.
Right.
Yeah, she's getting the shaft, but then it's like so hyped, too. It's not her fault, but I've just heard so much about her. It gets annoying after a while. Yeah, let her be another player, not like the whole spotlight every single minute of every day.
Right.
I mean, they're hounding her. You know, that's the problem.
Yeah.
The best NFL player went to Patrick Mahomes, as if anybody had any doubts at all. Over Myles Garrett, Lamar Jackson, and Christian McCaffrey. Best MLB player went to Shohei Ohtani over Ronald Acuna, Garrett Cole. I don't even know why Garrett Cole is in this list, considering how much of a choker he is. And Corey Seager.
Yeah. Shot fired, though.
I mean, am I wrong?
No.
Hey, I'm a Mets fan. I'm staying over here. I got the popcorn. I'm just listening in. You guys can go out.
Could be worse if you're going to call it Stanton.
That is true. It could be worse. Could be Giancarlo Stanton.
A-Rod's up there, too. A-Roy's up there, too.
Yeah, but that's for this year, though,
not for
all time.
I'm just rooting
all time, of course, A-Roid would be up there.
We talk smack about my Mets. I got to give it back. I got to talk junk on the Yankees sometimes. It's a fun rivalry. Well, Red Sox, yeah, we have a triangle here.
Best NHL player went to Connor McDavid of the Edmonton Oilers over Nikita Kucherov,
yes.
Nathan MacKinnon, and Austin Matthews.
Got to give it to him.
This one I'm not so sure about because, if I recall correctly, Nathan MacKinnon won the MVP. If you're the MVP, that means you're the best player.
Right.
So in that case, why did it not go to MacKinnon? Why did it go and save McDavid?
Maybe the deep playoff push into the Stanley Cup?
Well, overall season, you know, I think that played a factor in. That is,
possibly.
You know, his playoff performance. You know, record-breaking performance in the playoffs. I mean, you know, that was the factor.
I think that'd be the only reason, to separate him.
Well, then in that case, you know, it makes you wonder if they do factor in the playoff performance, then why was he not? Why did he not win the best athlete?
Yeah. You know, whoever comes up with this, you know, or I think they have to, you know, rethink how they deal with.
Right.
There's something mighty peculiar. There's something very peculiar about
and
this
such,
voting staff.
It's broad sweeping definitions, like the titles, like best showman or like best athlete. It's like, it's not just like most improved player or rookie of the year. So, I mean, there's so many people that could be, like, debated. It's pretty tough to, like, say who could be the best. Everyone, there's several arguments for most of these categories. So, it's, I mean, who would vote on something like that, though? Was it, like, the players? Was it the coaches? The media? I don't know. It's tough to say, like, who deserves it the most.
I don't know, actually. I don't know who votes on that, actually.
the one I really detest is just the South Carolina one. And I got nothing wrong with them, but they're not the best team.
Let's see, the best NBA player, believe it or not, I do not have any problems with this one. The best NBA player went to Luka Doncic of the Dallas Mavericks over Nikola Jokic, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and Jason Tatum. Honestly, if you're almost averaging a triple-double during your season, not to mention scoring 33 points per game, how are you not the best NBA player?
Right. I mean, although they didn't win the title, I mean, but, you know, Luka, you know, just dominated on the board this year.
Yeah. I mean, granted, Nikola Jokic had averaged a double-double, but you also, I mean, come on, you have a guy basically only a fraction away from averaging a triple-double for the year. You don't really see that all that often in the NBA.
Nope.
I think the last player to do it was who, Russell Westbrook?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so.
Or pretty close to it. I would say, if anything, maybe Jokic was his biggest competition in this, but, I mean, Luka kind of just ran away with it, in all honesty.
Mm-hmm.
The best WNBA player went to Asia Wilson of the Las Vegas Aces. I mean, kind of self-explanatory. She was the MVP. So,
yeah, she's the best.
I mean, that kind of makes sense. If you're the MVP, you're obviously the best. You're obviously the best player of your league. So,
yeah, look at her stats wise. She's like head and shoulders above the rest. She's clear-cut number one.
She won over Nafisa Collier of the Minnesota Lynx, Alyssa Thomas of the Connecticut Sun, and Brianna Stewart of the New York Liberty.
Yep.
The best soccer player, one name I'm surprised is not on this list, is Lionel Messi. But instead it went to Kylian Mbappe from France/Real Madrid. I mean, to be completely honest, it's not really a surprise that Mbappe won this award.
No.
Just considering he's basically a younger Lionel Messi when it comes to his offensive output. And not just that, but all around, he's arguably the best player. I mean, 27 goals in 29 games last year.
Wow.
Almost
game,
averaging
not
a
shabby.
Goal per game.
Yeah, he's the one.
So, yeah. I mean, that basically, that didn't surprise me at all. The thing that surprised me, though, was Lionel Messi was not one of the nominees.
Right.
Best driver went to Max Verstappen of Formula One, winning over Matt Hagen of the NHRA, Ryan Blaney of NASCAR, and Alex Palou of IndyCar. Ryan Blaney, really?
Yeah.
Was Kyle Busch busy?
He might have been.
Wait a minute. Let me see. 1, 2, 3. Blaney had 3 wins last year. Hang on a minute. 2023. Let me see who had the most. Kyle Larson had the most. Wait. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
I got to see who had the most wins last year. Okay, so Martin Truex Jr. won the regular season championship. last year. Oh, okay. Ryan Blaney won the 2023 title. Okay. Okay. Never mind. Okay. That makes sense why he was nominated. Yeah, that makes sense why he was nominated then. Best golfer went to Scottie Scheffler. I don't think that was much of a decision there, to be perfectly honest.
No.
I mean, can we name anybody who's considered to be a better golfer?
Got to use my one liner from Lucia last week. He definitely didn't win Best Driver of the Year award, but Best Golfer, yes.
Yeah.
Best driver.
I get one in there every once in a while. I bring something to the table every once in a blue moon. I nailed one there.
I get it.
Scheffler is not the driver of the year.
He won over Xander Schauffele, Nelly Korda, and Lilia Vu. Best boxer went to Terrence Crawford over Saniyasa Estrada, Naoya Inoue, and surprisingly, Oleksandr Usyk, the guy who literally just beat the Gypsy King. Although with Crawford, I guess it makes sense. Crawford is like both boxers are undefeated, but Crawford's like 40-0. He's undefeated, but who did Usyk face? Crawford only fought once last year in 2023. He beat Errol Spence Jr. Usyk beat Daniel Dubois. Okay, maybe that's why, because he beat Daniel Dubois. But Crawford has not fought once this year. Meanwhile, not only did Usyk beat Dubois, but he also beat Tyson Fury to win Tyson Fury's long-held heavyweight title.
Wow.
Okay,
that's a weird vote, then.
This one I disagree with. How do you not give it to Usyk here, unless you're going based off of record?
Yeah, one would think Usyk should get it.
I mean, come on. He beat the Gypsy King, a guy who held on to the heavyweight title for so long. I guess maybe it's because it was a split decision and it wasn't a unanimous decision, maybe.
Yeah, could be.
Well, wow. I mean,
wow.
Tyson Fury was 34-0-1 going into that fight with Usyk. And Usyk, I mean, I'll be perfectly honest, you know, rewatching that fight, Usyk picked him apart.
Yeah.
So I'm very shocked that Usyk lost this to Terrence Crawford. Best UFC fighter went to Sean O'Malley over Alex Pereira, Islam Makhachev, and also Zhang Weilei. Zhang Weilei, I understand. Makhachev, though? Well, then again, Sean O'Malley, he did win the bantamweight title. Makhachev, though, let me double-check. Who did he last beat? Makhachev blasted Dustin Poirier into retirement, knocked out Volkanovski with a head kick. Okay. I'm sorry. Okay, you know, there are some problems with the combat sports ones that I have here.
Sure. Yeah.
Even Pereira has more of an argument. I remember the Prochaska knockout. I remember the Hill knockout. Actually, I remember both of the Prochaska knockouts, I should say. Honestly, I mean, Sean O'Malley, you know, he had a pretty good run to the title, beating out Jermaine Sterling, which actually, come to think of it, oh, okay, that's why. So he beat Aljamain Sterling, who broke the record for the most consecutive bantamweight championship title defenses, with three title defenses. So okay, I see why they gave it to O'Malley now, because Sterling was considered to be running away with the division. All right, yeah, that makes sense. Best tennis player went to Coco Gauff over Novak Djokovic, Carlos Alcaraz, and Iga Swiatek. I mean, Coco Gauff, 20 years old, African-American tennis player. She did win the U.S. Open.
Yes.
Two major semifinals and world number two in singles, French Open doubles champion as well this year. And Djokovic, did he win or did he won the tour finals. He won the U.S. Open last year. He won the French Open and he won the Australian Open. Honestly, he has a bigger resume, but I guess maybe it's because she did it at the age of 20.
Right.
Honestly, I don't understand.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't really understand that now. Jesus. I mean, looking at some of these categories, is there anybody that anybody disagrees with for who should have won whichever one?
I've got the USC one and the team of the year one. Those are my two.
Which one?
Maybe that.
The UFC fighter, Youssef, and then I thought, you know, could have been Celtics, could have been Wolverines. I definitely thought that UConn with the back-to-back should have taken that specific category over the Gamecocks girls.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's – honestly, it's very, very confusing. Yeah. It's really, really confusing when it comes to who should have been, you know, who should have won what, basically. Moving over to the MLB trade deadline, we do have 50 candidates for, and I'll give a little bit of a spoiler. Most of them are either from the Tigers, the White Sox, the Angels, or the Marlins, with a little bit of Athletics thrown in there as well. But needless to say, it kind of seems like we know who the sellers are going to be. The buyers, it kind of sounds like the Boston Red Sox are kind of sneaking in there potentially to be buyers. Remains to be seen, but it kind of sounds like that's where the argument is moving towards, according to sources close within the organization. So, I mean, as a Boston fan, I'm kind of intrigued by it, but hopefully they actually address their needs and not just make a move to make a move, so to speak.
Yeah. No, I think they will, Steve. I know over here in the New York area, I mean, I'm just really elated. I'm surprised and pleasantly surprised. I mean, everyone was saying, oh, Alonso, he's going to get moved. But yeah, the Mets out of nowhere. They're 26-10 since June 1st. So they've won like 5 of 6, 10 of 12,
yeah.
16 of 20, 16-4 in their last 20. Those wins are adding up. They're just winning games. So they're surprisingly they've done a 180. Apparently they're going to be buyers too. Their biggest weakness, if you haven't seen a lot of them, is their bullpen's awful. They should have 5 more wins. They've blown some really like 4 or 5 run leads in like the 8th inning. So if they get a good bullpen, I'm not saying anything big, but like definitely a wild card too. They're in the wild card right now, and they're red hot. So hopefully they buy. I'm glad they're not going to be selling guys, though, that's for sure. But yeah, I expect your Red Sox to be buyers too. It's going to be really damning if John Henry doesn't buy at this point. Like,
right?
The Red Sox fans must be so pissed. Like they're very similar to the Mets. Like I think they're probably better young talent, but they're both like good talented teams. They should both be buyers. They're both in big cities, big markets. Like,
I mean,
there's no reason why the Red
Sox should
be buyers.
When you have young players rising to the occasion, like Willier Abreu, who they got a couple of years ago in the Christian Vasquez trade, when you have Rafaela stepping up, becoming basically a mini Mookie, as I call him,
yeah.
You know, Jaron Duran gets named to his first All-Star game, you know, Connor Wong, surprisingly, is looking like the biggest part of that Mookie Betts deal, as opposed instead of Verdugo.
Their whole pitching staff is younger and good. Hawk, Crawford, they have a lot of pleasant surprises. And like you said, really young, so I expect them to only get better. They're all progressing.
But here are some of the names on the list. First off, the top two pitchers on this list, Jack Flaherty from the Tigers, a right-handed pitcher. He's the top rental arm, if not the top rental player entirely on the trade market this year. He signed a 1-year, $14 million deal in the offseason to go to Detroit. 3.13 ERA in 95 innings, an elite 32.1% strikeout rate and a dominant 4.3% walk rate. He's been one of the best pitchers in Major League Baseball this year. Luckily, he did avoid a trip to the injured list despite some back discomfort this year. However, he should command a top 100 prospect and more despite his rental status because of he is the type of playoff-caliber starter that a playoff team would want. And also, he could earn a team a compensatory pick after the first round next year if he rejects the qualifying offer and signs for more than $50 million in the offseason.
Yeah.
Then again, the team that acquires him could just sign him to a contract extension if they want to. You also have Garrett Crochet of the White Sox. He's a left-handed pitcher. Let's be honest. His numbers are kind of skewed, and that's because the White Sox fucking suck this year. And I'm not just talking hitting-wise. I'm talking all around. They fucking suck. They are the worst team in the league. The asking price will be basically what a team would be asking in return for trading away an ace. However, though, his long injury history may give some teams some pause, though. There's been a rumor that he may be packaged with Luis Robert Jr. potentially in any deal that is made. Carlos Estevez from the Angels is another pitcher on the market. The closer, 13 straight scoreless appearances, 2.79 ERA across 29 innings, which is a personal best for him. Striking out 26.2% of opponents. Uh, kind of sounds like, apart from Mason Miller, he may be one of the top closers on the market. He does head back into free agency next winter, so he is a rental alongside Tanner Scott of the Miami Marlins. Though it is kind of, his numbers are kind of skewed as well. A 1.42 ERA, but he does have a Grizzly walk rate of 14.9%. So, I mean, that's kind of, he's kind of a little overvalued, I guess you could say. Jazz Chisholm Jr. has now been placed on the trade block by the Miami Marlins, an outfielder and second baseman. Basically think Mookie Betts or Sadan Rafaela. That's basically who he is.
The Yankees might be interested in him, I heard.
A 253 hitter dating back to 2022, and he's four homers with 52 steals in that stretch of 996 plate appearances. However, his injury history is a big red flag, though, as he's only reached 100 games once in a single season. It does not say if he's a rental, though. That's the thing. Oh, no, he's controllable through 2026. So that might fetch quite a little bit of return for the Marlins. Eric Fetty of the White Sox. Oh, okay, here we go. Yeah, 111 in the third innings, 2.99 ERA, 21.6% strikeout rate, just shy of the league average, and a 6.6% walk rate. He's kept the ball on the ground at a 46.5% clip. So definitely a big ground ball type pitcher. The Rays have two starters on the market, Zach Littell and Zach Eflin. So the Rays, despite hanging around 500, looks like they may be sellers. Littell is under control for one more season. Eflin is in the second year of a three-year deal. So kind of seems like even though they are already down starters as it is, the Rays are just going to clean house, essentially, it seems.
Yeah.
Or they're going to try to.
They're kind of tricky. They just got Shane Baz back, who's really good. And then they're adding Jeff Springs, the really good lefty. He's ready to come back in. So even though they're usually sellers, I think this time, usually that's right, but like, I think they're actually coming back. They have kind of like injury reinforcements coming in. Springs and Baz are coming back in. So they're kind of, they traded Savali. They're kind of like making room for guys coming in. But, dude, with the Rays, you never know. They'll probably sell and then still be in like the wild card hunt somehow. It's such a weird
thing. Maybe.
They're always selling, but their farm's so damn good. They never flounder because they just bring up guys out of nowhere.
Then for the Blue Jays, you have Danny Jansen, their catcher, Yusei Kikuchi, their left-handed starter, and Trevor Richards, right-handed pitcher, I believe, out of the bullpen. Kikuchi is considered to be one of the top rental starters on the market, 3.77 ERA, 27.1% strikeout rate, 5.9% walk rate, and a grounder rate of 40.8% in 212 and a third innings, basically a candidate for any starting rotation. Jansen is considered to be the top catcher on the market, hitting 217. It is worth noting, dating back to 2021, he has averaged 27 homers per 162 games played. So maybe if somebody's in dire need of a catcher, he's probably somebody of interest. And Richards, he's been inconsistent, but he has been pretty effective this year. 3.40 ERA out of the pen, 25% strikeout rate. He's more of a control pitcher as opposed to a heavy heater. Only averaging 92.4% or 92.4 miles per hour on his fastball. Brent Rooker is another one, another candidate from the Oakland Athletics. I mean, if you want some, if you want a heavy hitter, you know, this is a guy to look at. 48 homers and 875 plate appearances with a .260 batting average during his time with the A's. He's also controllable through the 2027 season. He's a poor defender, so that limits him to just being either left field, first base, or designated hitter. I mean, it's somebody, if you're looking for a power bat, it's somebody to keep an eye on.
Yeah.
Hunter Harvey already got dealt.
I was going to real quick to say, how the heck did the A's ever expect to, you know, climb themselves out of, like, the basement and be a clown show? Like, if they're putting up a star reliever who's, like, 23 years old, Mason Miller, he throws, like, 102 if you've seen him pitch. How is he in trade rooms?
Yeah.
Like, if you're going to rebuild, don't you keep, like, the few great players you have are young? Why are you trading your young players away? Like, are they going to keep anyone or just continue to lose players? They're going to get worse and worse, never better.
Because they don't want to pay them.
It's just so pathetic. Right. I know they have, like, 458 fans, but I feel bad for all 458.
They don't want to pay them. That's the problem. It's kind of like John Henry.
It's just such a,
when you get to a certain level of production, you know, basically they don't want to pay for homegrown talent, essentially.
So bad. Like, they finally have a couple of young, really rising stars, and they're like, oh, they're already available. You can come get them. We're not paying them. It's pitiful. Terrible for the fans.
Michael Kopech is another option out there. And don't be fooled. He may have a 5.31 ERA as a closer, but it's worth noting that he plays for the horrible White Sox.
Okay, we'll give you that because they do suck.
And he has a power arm as well, 98.6 miles per hour on his fastball, striking out 29.7% of his opponents. He's controllable through arbitration through 2025. I mean, he has a pretty high walk rate, 13.1%, and almost 2 home runs per 9 innings. But if you have a good pitching coach, you know, sometimes like is evidenced by Boston this year. Sometimes all it takes is a new pitching coach to change things. I mean, look at what Andrew Bailey has done for the Boston Red Sox this year, pitching wise. An upgrade from Dave Bush of last year. Pitchers that sucked last year are now all of a sudden good this year.
Yeah, go figure that.
So, I mean, you know, who knows? Maybe somebody can turn around Kopech, given the right pitching coach and everything.
That's right.
Steve,
I just looked it up real quick. Kopech was the formerly number one ranked prospect in baseball, coming up through in his teens. He was traded for Chris Sale.
Yep.
You know this guy's got talent. Kopech could be an awesome.
Oh, yeah.
If you've seen him pitch, too, he throws heat. He's got some awesome upside. That'd be a good trade for anyone.
Like I said, I would love to see him come back to Boston because I want to see what Andrew Bailey could potentially do with him.
Yeah.
Because Andrew Bailey so far has worked on so many pitchers this year, and he's really turned certain pitchers around. I mean, I could just name off quite a few, but I won't at this point. Pete Fairbanks is also on the trade block. Tampa Bay's closer, 15 saves this year, 25 saves last year. He's tossed 170 and a third innings since the start of 2020 with a 2.75 ERA, 33% strikeout rate, and a 10.1% walk rate. This is basically a sign, and plus he's under a club option through 2026. So this is basically this is basically the Rays essentially cleaning shop, essentially.
Yeah.
I mean, Randy Arozarena is also on the trade market as well for the Rays.
The Wander Franco thing really shook them up. Yeah, and they're missing their ace, McClanahan, their best hitter, Franco. Their best prospect's going to be ready next year, Caminero, to replace Franco. So, yeah, it's just not the Rays year. They're kind of like they're kind of cashing in on this year. They'll reload like they tend to do, I guess. They always funnel guys out like this. They wash people out, and then they bring in – they'll have like two or three new 21-year-olds next year.
Yeah, some other notable names on the market, Trevor Rogers of the Miami Marlins. I mean, he's kind of having a pretty bad year this year, 4.82 ERA and 89 and two-thirds innings. A former first-round pick and top prospect, still only 26 years old and controllable through 2026. So it could be another one of those players that if you can – he's also a former Rookie of the Year runner-up too. So he's one of those type of players, if you have a pitching coach who's helped turn around different pitchers, he could be one of those candidates potentially. Andrew Chafin of the Detroit Tigers, 3.72 ERA, 28.8 strikeout rate versus an inflated 10.6% walk rate. An established, experienced lefty who can be controlled through next season, so he's not technically a rental. Let's see. Gio Urshela and Miguel Andujar, both former Yankees. They're also on the trade market for the Tigers and the Athletics. Also, Urshela is cheap, only $1.5 million, and can play all around the infield. Andujar, meanwhile, I mean, only three homers and 165 plate appearances, so you're not really getting much with him, but he is cheap and controlled through 2025. Josh Bell is on the market, but it's mainly because Miami's going to be trying to pry him loose and not teams aren't necessarily going to be going after him. He's being paid $16.5 million this year in his first full season with Miami, only hitting .227. This is the case of a astronomically horrible contract that Miami decided to sign him to, and now they're having buyer's remorse, basically. Let's see. I mentioned Mason Miller is on there. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette. They are both on the list. I'll tell you one thing. Remember what we were talking about with John Henry and Boston?
Yes.
Imagine how much goodwill John Henry would have with the fans if he were to go out and acquire somebody like Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
Yes.
Imagine how much goodwill with the fans he would have.
It's not going to make him not be able to pay his bills on Monday. It's just ridiculous. You'd think he'd make one or two splash moves to win them back over. He's got money to burn. Like, enough with this guy. He should absolutely make a move.
Yeah.
He better.
And also, he will be a free agent. He will be a free agent in 2026. So, I mean, it's not like he's going to be a rental, and neither will Bo Bichette either. But, I mean, technically, I guess they have their shortstop situation solved right now with Rafaela taking over. Also, Tarik Skubal is on the list as well. The current AL Cy Young favorite is on the trade block as well. I mean, there's a ton of players that could potentially be on the move.
Mm-hmm.
Just some other notable names if their teams end up dropping in the standings. For the Cubs, you could look at Jameson Taillon, Drew Smyly,
yeah.
Hector Neris potentially. For the Diamondbacks, maybe Paul Sewald, their closer. Jock Peterson, Randall Grichuk. For the Giants, Mike Yastrzemski, I'll tell you one thing, you know, that maybe would appeal to Boston, not just because he's the grandson of Carl Yastrzemski, but because of his power potential.
Yeah, they got some grandpa.
Pirates, you know, Aroldis Chapman, Martin Perez, Rowdy Tellez, Yasmani Grandal. For the Rangers, look at potentially Nathan Eovaldi, Kirby Yates, John Gray, Michael Lorenzen, Andrew Heaney. For the Reds, you know, Frankie Montaz might be an option, Lucas Sims, Jonathan India. I've heard that they are trying to move Jonathan India. Nick Martinez. I mean, there are other candidates, but they're injured, like Cody Bellinger, Paul Blackburn, Mike Clevenger, Alex Cobb, Joey Gallo, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, Jesus Luzardo, Jordan Montgomery, and so on and so forth. But needless to say, it kind of seems like we're going to have a pretty active MLB trade deadline, perhaps this year.
This year, in a way.
When we consider where things stand right now in the league, I mean, the AL East, you got Baltimore leading the way in the AL East. Actually, they're just barely ahead of the Yankees right now by percentage points, by like 0.002%. They're 4.5 ahead of Boston. For the Central, you got the Cleveland Guardians dominating, but Minnesota 4.5 back, Kansas City 7 back. Kansas City just dropped out of the wild card. They're now a game back in the wild card.
Yeah.
Detroit's hanging around 500, but they'll probably become sellers potentially. Seattle leads the way in the AL West. 1.5 games ahead of Houston. Imagine that. Remember where we saw Houston was at the beginning of the season? And now look at where they are.
Yeah, they were talking about being sellers 2 weeks ago. Bregman.
Yeah.
Now they can be buyers.
Now they're in playoff contention right now. Only a game and a half back.
Yeah, go figure that out.
Meanwhile, the Texas Rangers, I mean, 6.5 back and 7.5 back in the wild card. I mean, anything's possible, but they're looking like – they're not going to have a chance to defend their title, it looks like. The NL East is run by the Philadelphia Phillies. Atlanta is in the wild card, and the Mets, I believe, are in the wild card.
Yeah, they're in the wild card. They're going to be buying. I really think so. Bullpen and probably one starter. They're also getting their ace back in a couple weeks, Kodai Senga. So it's looking, and they're playing Miami out of the break. The Mets are going to be they're entrenched in that wild card. I think moving forward, they got to add. Boston's got to add. The Mets got to add. I really hope Boston adds, Steve. They really have to.
So do I. Otherwise,
let's make this a
Jonathan Papelbon. Jonathan Papelbon said on a Red Sox broadcast earlier this week, he said, if Boston does not add at this deadline, you risk losing half of your remaining fan base, and we're talking about the diehards. You risk losing half of your remaining fan base. You risk losing half of the, I mean, yeah, you'll get the, you know, you'll get the tourists, but you risk alienating a pretty big portion of your fan base, a pretty big portion of the fans that come to the games.
No doubt. Yep.
However, the one thing that gives me hope, though, is Craig Breslow did say that they would be committed to a they would be committed to taking a lane, whether it's buying or selling. They're not going to go down the middle, meaning they're not going to do buying and selling. So he did say they are committed to going down one certain lane, whether it be buying or selling. And considering the way they've been recently, I'd say they are probably going to be buyers.
Yeah.
I think another thing, too, is if they're buyers, that may bring the possibility that Alex Cora may re-sign. If management is finally going to show him that, you know, they're finally going to give him some support. Because Alex Cora is in a contract year. And also there's rumors of him potentially jumping ship to the New York Yankees if the Yankees fire Boone.
That would be huge.
It would be, yeah.
Yeah.
The Central is led by the Brewers, 3.5 games ahead of the Cardinals. The Pirates are still kind of in it, lingering around 500, and so are the Reds. Cubs are falling out of it, kind of. Only 4.5 games back of the wild card, though. Dodgers, they own the West. The Padres are kind of in the wild cards or the Diamondbacks. Giants are falling out of it. I mean, it's going to be, it's basically going to be anybody's season this year, I kind of feel. There's still a lot of variables in play.
Oh, Steve, before we go,
a fun summer.
I don't know if I'll be here or not next week because, like, you know, I have the, I have an event to go. I don't know what time it's going to be in, but if I do come in, I probably won't be on time.
Okay. Well, just keep me posted.
Right. But if I do,
yeah, keep me posted.
All right. On that note, good night.
All righty. With that being said, thank you to everybody for joining me this week. Thank you to Lou, Alex, Diane, and Chris. A reminder, Big Brother fans, the Big Brother Recap podcast begins this upcoming Friday night at 9 p.m. Eastern. Hosted by Melissa and myself. With that being said, have a great rest of your weekend, and we will see you guys next Saturday night for another edition of Sports Whispers Weekly.